And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Come on, say it, say it, say it. No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear. Here on Declare Your Independence in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. A lot of pushback. No singing. We hate it when you say .com. Oh, like that. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I do that out loud? Oh. Because I can. No, 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 no. Okay, we have a gentleman that's coming on probably in the third hour because he's in Texas somewhere. It's raining or something, and he's going to get flooded in. So he goes, you know what? I got to bug out here. You know, I'm going to get stuck, and then we'll do the third hour. But it's, so it looks like hopefully we'll get that taken care of. SafeCrossroads.net. Okay, it's a forum.safenetwork.io, madesafe.net. This is the safe network that I keep going on about. This is, Donna's been in contact with everybody, going, okay, you know, Infinity Algorithm is going to be giving us three of the boxes. You know, they're going to go, all right, here, but, and on. You know, start loading up all your stuff and everything, be first. You know, hello, we're mirrored over here. We're interfacing the back end of the site to where it simultaneously takes the feeds and, you know, creates the safe network version of Freedom's Phoenix and all the stuff that would, because we can, okay? Now, the hardware that they have for doing this, they have gone straight from where it was like Bitcoin, the nodes and so on were laptops, you know, and then it went graphic card and then dedicated miners. They already know where this goes. So they're going, you know what, we're just going to go to dedicated miner kind of, and we're done. So those machines, we get three of them because a couple of my developer guys and myself, and we're going to make sure that it's populated and done correctly and we're up and ready and hello, we're over here now. So that's it. And we'll be doing both. Of course, we'll stay on the World Wide Web for, I don't know, the weeks, days that we need to, you know, whatever. But I'm really seeing that this is a feature that's going to be changing. You know, you can see the trends in a lot of the ISPs, the internet providers, so on. But when you get guys like Verizon buying AOL for billions of dollars, you know, I'm going, why? What the hell does AOL have? Is this a payoff for some, they get some something, government liability protection at some something? I mean, AOL might as well just say CIA. So, I mean, I have no idea what they're doing. You know, we should check on that. Verizon, let me write that down. And next to my heart, I go, Verizon buys AOL, ? Why? What's the asset that they have there? AOL, what? That, I mean, it's like when Murdoch News Corp, you know, Fox News guy, buys MySpace back in 10 years ago for $380 million or some stupid thing like that. I'm going, why? Well, it was the database. It was the, you know, my favorite color, you know? So you're the product. Well, she just got an email from Daniel. The machines are ready. What they're waiting on is the safe network is not ready. And it could be, you know, a few weeks, years, you know, weeks turned into months, but soon. They're doing pretty well. Nick Lambert from Made Safe itself out of Troon, Scotland, he communicated, you know, we're about ready. We want to come on. Thanks for all you're doing. Saw the newspaper. You guys rock. And we're, you know, about ready to just, we're almost done. So let us, you know, head down, plow. We're feeling really good and soon. And I'm going, okay. So, okay. We got that going for us. So I'm very excited about this because I understand, you know, the power of this. It's as a demonstration. It's kind of like, you know, Bitcoin. I go, yeah, I understand the power of Bitcoin. You know, I understand. Now, where it goes and how it's used, you know, it's just a tool. It'd be, you know, whatever. Because it also very easily go down the dark side of they just get to track everything. I think that's where it's going. You know, I can see it's going to be a lot of benefits. It's going to be better in a lot of ways than what we have now. Cheaper to move money around. The amount doesn't matter. It's going to be more immediate. It's going to be more secure. I get it. You know, but it's also going to has the potential to be more surveilled. But the technology is there to provide for the next one. Well, the next one may have already been in the works. You know, the SafeCoin is a cryptocurrency that is used as an incentive for you to run the Safe protocol on your machines. Because how it works is you have all this data out there, and they're always sitting on some server somewhere. Well, that makes, you know, I took your server. It's now my server. You go, well, you can't do it. Yeah, well, we got boots that kick in doors and machine guns and stuff, and we say it's ours now. And you go, okay. So what happens if all the data is chopped up, sent out like leaves on the wind, you know, like feathers on the down on the wind, like a Forrest Gump, little feather floating around, okay? You send a piece of data, and you chop it up in the little pieces of that feather. Then it goes out to different computers that's encrypted as just internet dust, you know, on your hard drive there. And when it's requested, those files, kind of like a Napster thing, just come together on your computer and you see what you want or what you made available to anybody else to see. So pieces of it encrypted coming together when you desire it. Now, what would you want to do if you're using that as, you know, the people cloud or whatever? I would imagine you would back up your data. But how this works is going to be efficient. It's going to be fast. And it's going to be secure. So I'm betting on this technology, on the concept, the idea, the need for this. So that's why we're pushing this so hard. And it's also why we covered Bitcoin. I wanted to understand as this thing evolved. And the more and more I talk to people, they're like, yeah, it's good. Yeah, yesterday we had Tone Vase on, and Elena I met in Anarcopoco, Mexico, and Acapulco, of course, and she's from Brazil, an attorney. Well, her law firm, you know, for several years, they do just internet, anything internet. So, of course, she's been focusing on Bitcoin here of late, and they're in Hong Kong right now. Coming up this weekend is a big Hong Kong Bitcoin conference. Well, Hong Kong doesn't, you know, we don't even have an opinion, you know, whatever. Y'all let me know how it works out. So we'll see how it develops outside the U.S. The U.S., they see as an opportunity to track. And, man, we want to be a tracking. So we'll see. Tone is a VP at J.P. Morgan, you know. I think it was at J.P. Morgan. He was at Chase at one time. I mean, at whatever, doesn't matter. It's one of the big banks. And you know, when you get to be a VP of, you know, why kick butt, and you decide, man, I don't work for you guys anymore. I'm going to do a Bitcoin thing. What does that mean? Well, his big deal is, I've seen his presentations, is he shows that Bitcoin is going to be a big player in the space and finances in the terms of, you know, multi-sig accounts of stock purchase of somebody owed something and whatever. And you're going to need indices, indexes, you know, price point trading information, just like everything that you see, all the charts and all that kind of stuff on the stock market. You're going to need the same kind of services as it applies to Bitcoin. Well, that's what he does. He goes, I know how to do this. You know what? You're going to need a company that does this. And the government's going to, yep, and you got to fill out all the paperwork. So they're familiar as an attorney and someone on Wall Street. What will they do? To get the low-hanging fruit of we made just a bunch of money, we're going to comply. They're going to be all about compliance. Of course, they're going to know, you know, they're smart enough to know what it means, but, you know, they're going to make the money anyway. They're going to share with us the pitfalls. Safe Network doesn't work like that. It just doesn't matter what the lawyers say. That's my point. I go to these conferences. Well, the lawyer says I don't care. If I got to care what the lawyer says, then I got to care what Schumer says. Wrong tech.
Comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime. 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Oh, it's all about the future. Future, future, future. We're going to be doing that. You know, I'm running the software to do our own broadcasting from here. Said feeding from the network. You know, we're getting a lot of chop and so on because of whatever, the internet connection. So a lot of, you know, affiliates and so on want us to have a clean signal that goes out from here. And they finally, Allison Bricker finally finished the script for this, and we're testing it now, and it's running back here. It's doing good. Thank you, Allison. That's cool. The other thing is we have an app. I got to go over it today. And I've just been so busy. I mean, it's just been, you know, and I finally got a lot of big, long nap last night. Went to bed, got up, you know, kind of right before the show. I mean, you know, so I'm finally rested. I feel like, yeah, I went to the gym yesterday and everything. I'm just going, wow, man, I'm ready to rock and roll. Oh, got to turn on the air conditioner. And the irrigate out there is flooded, so all the chickens are freaking going nuts, all the bugs that come up when they irrigate. So I'm like, okay. So this is the future is going to be coming to a future near you here directly. And we have a lot of stories up here that I want to go over real quick, and we'll do that as we got time. But I keep wanting to emphasize the importance of having information that is secure and private, and the transfer of, and it's always about a number. If they can create a number, then they'll want to change the number. It is like, look at this number of the percentage of the people that, you know, fill in the blank. And when they're telling you this, it's always, here comes the law, or here comes the program, or here comes the project for them to change and alter that number. I've learned this. The only way you can realize this is but just being live long enough and paying attention. You know, since like the late 80s, you know, I'm paying attention. I'm going, they're just programming us. This is a psyop. All this, you know, queuing up and get in line and take off and put in and do, and kind of, it just gets to the point that it gets a temperature up to where they're kind of, yeah, the people, we don't like this. We're going to make decisions based on, you know, this kind of stimuli we get from everywhere. And yeah, we're going to drive, or we're not going to fly, or we'll do it, you know, remotely and virtual and whatever. Once you start making things that, you know, interactive virtually, it starts to change how you live your life. You don't have to go, you know, because think about it. When you do a lot of trips and so on, you're just like going, man, what a drag. I got to come home. My daughter and son-in-law, they just went to Europe for a couple of weeks. They were just doing it up, and they couldn't wait to get home. Like, yeah, this is cool, and that was cool, and Pompeii was cool, and Rome was cool, and this is kind of cool. But, you know, it's kind of, yeah, I want to go home. You know, so this is, can you take trips? Can you do, like, Total Recall? Can you get virtual? Can you go and experience and doing the salt spray on your face? This is the one thing that I always said, and I gave exactly this example. And it's just like, you think of it and stuff happens. I'm going, when we have a commercial that shows Hillary Clinton running for president, and you kind of, ooh, I kind of like, ooh, I'm getting a semi, ooh, she's so cute. And I kinda, you know, something's wrong. You know something? They're doing something. They're changing the pattern of the brain wave of the smell of vision of the kind of something kind of, you know, you're getting the right perfume or something, because you're going, there's just no way in hell you should be looking forward to that. So I'm just going, and we have a story up here about her and Chelsea. You won't believe this stuff. Anyway, so we'll go over it. But my point was, is I'm going, look, the frequency at which, you know, the signal, the flashing of the lights, the, you know, frame rate of the, you know, the, it's something to match your brain waves, like 60 hertz or something. I mean, I'm going, there's something going on here to make, turn kids into drones that are sitting there watching television. And it doesn't matter what's on. Heck, even when it's commercials, they're more glued. So I'm just going, there's something going on here. What other senses and stimuli could you get in there to accentuate the experience? You know, so I'm going, there was a kid in India. It was like, God, man, 5-6 years ago. I remember when since we started Freedom's Phoenix, because I remember us reporting on it. It was a young man came up with, I think it was like 4 or 5 cents. And a combination of these 4 or 5 perfumes, these scents, you could create any smell, like 3-4 colors you can have in combination. You can create a display, you know, of any view. Now they're going to go to 3D. Now they're going to go to, you know, whatever. So if you have another track on your file, you have a video track, you'll have an audio track, you'll have a smell track, you'll have a wind track, you'll have a whatever, tactile, touch, you know, function, smell, something track. So this, it gets more and more virtual reality. And I'm going to show you, see how much time we got in. Okay. Don't believe me? Let's take a look, shall we? This is called, what is this thing called? It's a VR mask and helmet that give you new sensations through smells and senses of wind, heat, water mist, and vibration present in virtual worlds. You know, how long is this thing? 5 minutes. Well, we'll go ahead and hold it when we come back, because I want you to see that this is where it's going. And I understand how powerful smells are. Smells of powerful taste. You know, in here, you're going to get a little bit of taste, too. And it's a mask that goes over, and it has little heating pads and, you know, fans. It can blow cool air and hot air, and you get a little water vapor. And it has 7 vials that are in there. You can reload, depending on what kind of virtual environment you're going in, to emphasize different smells. So when they took the prototype and they go to some, you know, consumer electronics show thing or a Comic-Con or something, and they have the people wear it, their reaction is like, what the heck was that? I don't know how the heck you did the smell thing, but that, so you get the salt spray on the ocean, or your Braveheart on the battlefield of spilled guts, you know, the thickness of the sweet kind of whatever blood smell you get in Spartacus sitting there slashing open with sword kind of intestine piling out all over. I mean, you know, it's just another track. It's going to be someone, they're going to be making the video game to center around the other virtual experiences that you can have. When you get to that point, you know, I'm not really, you know, I'm going to go to the beach. And you do it. There was an episode of Voyager. There's another ship that didn't have a holodeck, but they had kind of limited holodeck. You just put this helmet on, take a break. You go to the beach and you just stand there and salt spray and kind of visit, you know, an area. They didn't have enough power. You're interacting with other people very much, but you're just standing there and you can go someplace. This is not far off. I think it was this video, they're doing, you know, what is real? There was a scene from The Matrix. Define real. It's just inputs into your brain. Once they start doing that, we need to be aware. Because they're going to make you want and desire things that aren't necessarily good for you or sure as heck for freedom. They're going to be, oh, and I get a warm, ooh, fuzzy, you know, every time I get a little extra socialism, you know. If they can, they are, or soon will be. So what's the fight back? I don't know. It's going to be, you know, games and experiences that are going to be in support of freedom. Illegal. You're not allowed to have that one. That one's too anti-state. You know, who made this program? You're not allowed. Well, they're going to be written already. They're going to be out available, and you can get them on the Safe Network. See what I mean? It's all going to be about ones and zeros.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Seems like the script is running well. Well, that's good. That's good. You know, this is, we got to test everything before we go making a lot of changes. We're going to be making a lot of changes. And it's nothing probably you'd notice more than just a connection with, you know, we got to get a better mic and we got to get better this and better that. The app on Android and then iOS will come out later. I'm not worried about that because we already are on iTunes and so on. And it's pulled down from there pretty well. So we'll go ahead and finish up the Android app. And it's going to make it easier for people just to already have it, the show, on their phone. And it'll download and be able to be searchable and topics and guests and all. And we're working on that. Also, we have Freedom's Phoenix being paralleled on the Safe Network. And I'm just going to, we're going to be, testing this for, we're working with the guys on this. Because I convinced them that I'm going, look. You know, the biggest thing is, just information, news, updates, kind of. I mean, you need to have a multimedia kind of portal on wherever you're going to be, on anything like this. And I want to be first. Pick me. So they know that I understand the importance of this, so they're working with us. This is amazing that, keep in mind, it's only been just over a year. They got their money and their fundraising last year, April 22nd. It went up, and it was done in 5 hours because it was very successful. So I'm going, okay, we've been working since then, since like May, like a month or two after that, before the summer started, getting everything in the back end ready. And it looks like we've got a good team. We've taken our time, and we put some focus on it. I am of the opinion this is going to be like earth-changing kind of stuff. I know a lot of people, they don't see it. To me, it's neon flashing freaking obvious. I'm going, well, of course this is going to make it. It's the free market has enormous power to muscle through crap. And those are not going to want you to be able to communicate securely. And, big files, little files, they don't know, kind of, they can't see. We can't see, damn it, we can't see. We got the Ghost Gunner, and that's kind of how I see the 3D printing the gun and the lawsuit that Cody Wilson's doing against the State Department, the Ghost Gunner being able to, man, my son called me. Oh, my God, when does your son ever call you? So of course, there he's Uber machining manufacturing guy. And he goes, well, these blanks, I can't believe these billets are like $100. And I go, yeah, how much aluminum is that? He goes, like, I don't know, $10, plus the electricity to run the machine. If they're selling, if they're going to be going heavy into the blanks, he goes, I can get a couple machines, man. We could, pump these out, one every half hour. And he goes, dude, let me do the math. Man, there's some money to be made. I go, yeah, start thinking about it. But I go, he goes, yeah, but you don't need anything. You don't need, permission slip from the man or something. It's just a block of aluminum. It's not a lower. It's just an 80% lower. And I'm going, yeah. Well, they tend to frown on such things. So don't get too too in debt. This is, we'll talk about it. So, that's an option. So I'm going, all right, man, you really want to do that? I got safe, Second Amendment is for everyone. I got Freedom's Phoenix. I got lots of databases, lots of people that would endorse, a lot of people that would help, you want to rock and roll, it's freaking rock and roll. But understand what you're up against. I had to tell them, see, it's the fear. They want to get you, how much do I tell them? Do I try and talk them out of it? How much do you want to, Operation Choke Point. If you manufacture firearms, if you're in adult entertainment, or if you are a drug dispensary, you're not allowed to have a bank account. Operation Choke Point. They're just going to shut them down. Oh, I'm sorry. You make adult films. You don't get to have a bank account. Oh, I'm sorry. You make gun parts. You don't get to have a bank account. Oh, I'm sorry. You have a marijuana dispensary in Colorado. You don't get to have a bank account. I mean, this is control by we control. So I'm going, all right. So here comes cryptocurrencies, then exchanges. That's one thing. Oh, did you try and get hold of Eric Voorhees on his new thing? Okay, go ahead and bug him, and let's see if we can get him to talk about his silent vault, whatever it was. I can't remember what he called it, but it kind of had a vectored Fox logo thing, so I can't remember what the name of it was. But his whole thing is to be able to do exchanges from cryptocurrencies to any other currency. Well, I know what they call that. They call that money laundering, you know, because they can. They're going, yeah, but you didn't. Did you get the stroke dash permission slip form of? Well, he goes, I'm not in the U.S. So there, I'm. Yeah, he may be legal as hell, but that don't mean nothing, you know, to these guys. All right, let's go ahead and show this. I probably should have started off with it. Here we go with the video.
What is real? How do you define real? If you're talking about what you can feel, what you can smell, what you can taste and see, then real is simply electrical signals interpreted by your brain.
Morpheus, the Matrix.
Hi, my name is Natalie, and I'm the marketing director of Feel Real. I've been involved in the gaming industry for 10 years. I've always been interested in new technologies and gadgets. So when I first tried a VR headset, I said, wow, this is the future. These gadgets are great, but unfortunately, they give you a limited VR experience. Imagine how amazing the movie Avatar would be if you could smell the flowers in the forest, feel the wind when flying on the dragon, and catch the spray of a waterfall. Or explore the world of Warcraft, not only through vision and sound, but by involving all five of your senses. We want to make that experience possible. Our small team of programmers, 3D modelers, designers, and engineers has created a prototype mask that enhances the effects of sound and vision. Modern games use a force feedback technology that gives you sensory feedback as a type of force during the interaction. We took this technology as a starting point to simulate the tactile and olfactory senses. We worked hard, not only on how better to implement all the smell and sensory effects, but also how to make it easy and functional. So we got rid of wires and complicated settings. All you need to do is turn it on, and it starts working immediately. The prototype is connected to a PC via Bluetooth and works about 4 hours on the built-in batteries. We underwent a lot of tests, and through the efforts of our team, we've created a fully operating prototype, which we brought to the Game Developers Conference to show how it can change the future of VR.
Several people that try this at the...
Being able to smell what's, you know, going on, how you guys did that, I don't know. I want to know.
I want to know.
So how was it?
Oh, fuck,
yeah.
That's
great. Yeah?
Yeah, see, this is, you know, I can see... Let's go ahead and go skip forward to... I want to show you, you're talking about how it affected them and how they felt the wind and the heat and the spray and all this.
Excellent suggestions from people. We improved the design and size, reimagining every element to make it thinner, smaller, and lighter. And now, we are ready to introduce the world's first multi-sensory virtual reality mask for 3D video games and movies. To enhance personal presence in the virtual world, we used microcoolers to emit cool wind flows, microheaters to generate hot air, and ultrasonic ionizing system to produce water mist. For deeper interaction, we placed vibro engines with an adjustable level of vibration and built in a Bluetooth microphone to easy connect with other players around the world. Smells are something we paid our special attention to. We wanted to make them as natural as possible, so we got in touch with some professional perfumers. From a large number of scents, they chose a few that could best render the atmospheres of games and movies. With their help, we developed an odor generator with 7 removable smell cartridges that adds the scents to certain sensory by vaporizing a mixture of aromatic substances and can be easily changed depending on the game or movie you're playing or watching. The Feel Real VR mask is...
Imagine this. This is amazing. It's an Oculus Rift for the eyes, and then you add this other component.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Okay, now this virtual reality mask that they have is also being developed. That's what the Kickstarter for is, for the helmet. Now, it's just going to be an entire virtual reality helmet that has all these functions. Now, there's also, I've been to Consumer Electronics Show, to where they have these big platforms, these, you know, it's like those mini tramps or something. You know, you stand on them, you got a, you know, stabilization bar so you don't fall over. You put these helmets on, and you kind of walk, and you turn, and you look around. It's 3D in your helmet. I mean, it is freaking freaky. You know, this is stuff that, as a 12-year-old, you go, well, of course, I saw it on TV in a movie. It's not here yet. Well, here it comes. And once this stuff starts, it's going to go really fast. It's going to be a lot faster as it comes in. And the big thing has always been the software, the ones and zeros, the information that's relayed. Because think about this. You could have a virtual convention and you actually be there, you know, in this virtual world. You know, you could, you know, hear the voices, people talking. You know, you go in proximity, you can walk away from people. You got, you know, trolls chasing you down. Hey, listen to me, you know, or something. But you could do presentations. You have concerts. I'm thinking if, you know, it's like the, in Rome, you know, the Christians meeting in the catacombs kind of thing. You know, they're down in the catacombs and they're just kind of having a secret meeting. You know, let's talk about it. You know, let's plan. Let's conspire. Let's just ignore. Let's be away from. Let's not get permission for. This, you start providing ability for people to do that, it'll just be automatic. It'll be the standard by which people communicate and meet. You have meetups. Well, what's going to happen when you have meetups that you meet, you're in an hour time, you don't have to drive anywhere or do anything, you just put on your virtual helmet and, you know, and you just like you went to a meeting. You get to ask questions, you get your turn, you get to be heard, you get, and if somebody's a butthead, they just turn them off. They go, you know, and butthead doesn't get to come. Troll! You know, so I'm like, wow, that would be wow. And it can be anonymous. Everybody's walking around wearing their V mask. I don't know. Strange days are coming, man. You know, let's go ahead and go. That's enough of that one. But what else do we have in the future? Robotic pets may replace real ones in a decade. University of Melbourne animal welfare researcher Dr. Jean-Luc Rault says the prospect of robo-pets and virtual pets is not as far-fetched as we may think. Watch the movie or read the book Blade Runner. Blade Runner was all about, you know, everybody had all these different weird pets, but they were all android robot kind of pets. And it was rare that somebody actually, you know, had a real living animal. I'm not even sure it was legal. He argues pets will soon become a luxury in an overpopulated world, and a future may lie in chips and circuits that mimic the real thing. It might sound surreal for us to have robotic or virtual pets, but it could be totally normal for the next generation. It's not a question of centuries from now. If 10 billion human beings live on the planet in 2050, as predicted, it's likely to occur sooner than we think. If you described Facebook to someone 20 years ago, they'd think you were crazy. But we are already seeing people form strong emotional bonds with robot dogs in Japan. You know, they already have a little robot dog in Japan. But the I see this happening. The biggest reason is, you know, convenience. It could be a lot of things. You know, it could be security. It could be surveillance. It could be, you know, data. It could be Jarvis that you're talking to through the robot dog so the, you know, the microphone is close enough. You know, hey, stay within a dozen feet of me. If I tell you to do something, I want something done. It just integrates into your smart home. You know, it's like my dogs, you know, now. I mean, what happens when, you know, they hear a noise or something, boom, they're off. You know, I heard a cat last night. Something going on. Boom. She's off. Yeah, went out there to go and check it out. You know what was going on. I don't know. They eat my birds or what? You know, my chickens. So and I can see what they see. You know, I just pull up my smartphone sitting by my bed that has my clock on, and I look and, you know, push a button and boom, I'm getting a view. I can even control the view. I can, you know, take the autonomous, just go to the noise kind of feature and kind of start, you know, doing a joystick of go over and what's that over there. You know, this is, I would be shocked if it doesn't happen, you know, and rather quickly, because it's going to be very, it'd be very convenient for me, you know, because there's other things. Oh, I forgot to tell you about this. All right, let me show you this. Throw this camera drone in the air and it flies itself. Now, this is not one of those little dinky ones. This is, you know, the size of most of the drones now. I mean, it's probably, it looks like it's like 18 inches across. Now, I'm going to go ahead and just play this for you, and you'll see what happens. Now, a guy is standing on a mountain. He's hiking, and all of a sudden, he goes, you know, meet Lily. And it pulls out of a pack, and he just takes it, and he throws it in the air. Boom! Now, it's set. He's got a device that's on his arm that follows him, and you can set it for following you, leading you, circling you, so no matter what you're doing, you don't need somebody else with a camera. You get to the bottom, then it lands in your hand. Okay, you go to a bridge, and it's just throw it off the bridge. Boom, then it comes around, and it takes pictures of you going around in a circle and on your family vacation of look where I've been. You know, oh, here they're going into the river. They're going to do some kayaking, rough water, white water kayaking. They put the tracking device in a waterproof case. He throws it in the water. Oh, it floats. It's waterproof. It takes off from the water. Heavens, Murgatroyd. And it has a follow shot. You push the button. You say, no, I want a lead shot. You know, me going over this route. This is wow. And it's very sure you just put it in the backpack, just throw it in there, pull it out. The blades kind of, you know, fold up. Grandma throws it up, and boom, there it goes. This is amazing. There was another one called Podo, I think it was. And Podo is about the size of this tracking device. You just put it, sticks up anywhere, and it does for selfies, except you don't have to have a selfie stick. You can just point it anywhere. This is, I'm wondering how much this is going to be. You know, it doesn't say, but I'm sure it's not free. Well, you know, so we got that going for us. So now we have just chuck it in the air and it goes around and drone and flies and sees and surveils along with your robot cat dog cheetah. You know, now what happens when you know, it can fly, then run, and then hunt your ass down. Yeah, you know, well, that's coming. All right, so let's start going over some of the news here. Now, in preparation for today's show, this is the crossroads of Project Safe. There was a guy that got interested. He listens to the show, and he got really interested, and he started doing his own podcast, is the story I get. So he's like, hey, you know, we need to, this is something that needs to be tracked. You know, and I think I talked to this gentleman, and he's just like, you know, I need promotion for, I listen to the show, I want to track all this, I want to talk to the people, I want to see where we're going, because there's a lot of, you know, watch my bit and Bitcoin, let's talk Bitcoin, that kind of stuff, but there wasn't for the Safe Network. So he's like, hey, man, I see, you know, I'm interested anyway, let's do it. So he did. So he started off, and it starts off with the first one. Now, SAFE stands for Secure Access for Everyone. You know, we have Second Amendment is for everyone, is our SAFE thing. So we got, you know, SAFE Project, SAFE this, SAFE Ledge, SAFE. Are you safe? Are you unsafe, Congressman? Safe. So we have, you know, the SAFE Network along with the SAFE. You know, I'm seeing some SAFE stuff coming up. And they're going to have some logos and artwork and trinkets and trash, and we're working on that. And there may be some fundraising thing we do as we go into full integration with the new web. I might be doing something that kind of emphasize this because we got a lot of it done already, but it's the project of what we want to do with it that's going to cost some money. So we're going to see if we can get the community involved in that. Create a community. over on the SAFE Network. So meet the future of commerce. Now, Daniel DeBeck, we're happy to present an interview with Daniel. This is one of their podcasts. Daniel DeBeck is the co-founder and CEO of Infinity Algorithms. They're the ones that are supplying the hardware for the network. They're ready. They go, we're sitting here ready. We're just waiting for the software to be finished. You know, so you're not waiting on us. The first company created specifically to exploit the SAFE network commercially. We talk about Daniel's remarkable background and fully break down the first project of Infinity Algorithms, SAFEX, the technology which will allow truly decentralized commerce with the launch of the SAFE network. They're counting on this. When this thing goes, it's going to be a full-on go. They're way more infrastructure created than people realize. It's just when the software is done, they push the button, and we're going to be on the front wave edge of the wave of that, because I want to, and I anticipate this is going to be world-changing.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Wednesday, May 13th, 2015. Silver is trading at $16.95 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,203 per ounce. And according to BitcoinAverage.com, the average price of Bitcoin is $245. Antiwar.com reports 6 weeks into their aerial campaign, and after 48 hours of severe escalation, Saudi Arabia has announced a temporary halt to their airstrikes against Yemen, the beginning of what they say will be a five-day humanitarian pause. There is skepticism, but also a lot of hope among Yemeni civilians who are hoping their cities won't be bombed over the next few days, and hoping even more that the Saudi naval blockade will begin allowing humanitarian aid into the country. While fighting picked up, particularly along the border in the hours leading up to the 11 p.m. deadline, residents of Yemeni cities have reported no incidents in the first couple of hours since. Saudi military commanders say that despite the pause, they will continue overflights of Yemen for surveillance purposes and will resume strikes if they believe the Houthis are violating the terms of the deal, which includes that none of their troops move for the next 5 days. For over 35 years, Robertson Roberts has been a trusted source for buying and selling your investment-grade precious metals. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and permanently removed the minimum purchase order for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Robertson Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on investing and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 850-478-5270 or online at rrbi.co. UPI reports a 7.3 magnitude earthquake struck Nepal on Tuesday, just weeks after another earthquake devastated parts of the nation and killed more than 8,000 people. At least 37 people were killed and more than 1,000 injured in the town of Chatara by the latest earthquake. At least 17 also died in India and one in Tibet. A 6.3 magnitude aftershock followed shortly after Tuesday's quake. The earthquake occurred about 50 miles east of Kathmandu, the country's capital. The latest quake struck at a depth of 9 miles, and Nepal is still recovering from the magnitude 7.8 earthquake that struck the central part of the country on April 25th, leading to thousands of deaths and 17,000 injured. The effects of the latest quake were felt in Kathmandu, but there were no reports of significant damage there. The Save the Children charity said teams were assessing the impact on buildings that had already been damaged and told USA Today, it's a terrifying time for the hundreds of thousands of children and families who lost everything in the April 25th earthquake. Meanwhile, a U.S. Marines helicopter conducted disaster relief missions in Nepal went missing on Tuesday. ExpressCoin is the best choice for buying Bitcoin, Litecoin, Dogecoin, and more. ExpressCoin prides themselves on their customer service, so much so that the back end on the website should allow them to be even more focused on your needs. Get your cryptocurrencies with money order, check, wire transfer, or cash deposit. Get started at expresscoin.fppradio.com. That's expresscoin.fppradio.com.
Reuters reports Texas on Tuesday executed a man convicted of murdering his girlfriend, her mother, and grandfather in their Houston home in 2002 as he took revenge on the family for trying to cut off his relationship with the daughter. Derek Charles was announced dead at 6:36 p.m. Central Time after receiving a lethal injection at the state's death chamber in Huntsville, according to prison officials. Charles, who strangled all three, was the 525th inmate executed in Texas since the U.S. Supreme Court reinstated the death penalty in 1976, with the state accounting for 37% of all executions in the country during the time. The U.S. Supreme Court denied a petition seeking to halt the execution. Lawyers for Charles had argued that he was mentally incompetent and could not legally be subject to capital punishment. At the time of the crime, Charles was 19 and out on parole for burglary. Prosecutors said he sought revenge on Brenda Bennett because she was trying to stop her underage daughter, Maisha, from having sex with Charles. Charles hid in the family home and first beat Obi Bennett with a lamp and trophies. The grandfather was found in the kitchen with an electrical cord around his neck, according to prosecutors and the Texas Attorney General. He then waited for Brenda and Maisha to come home. When they arrived, he bound and gagged them. According to prosecutors, he killed Maisha and sexually assaulted and strangled her mother. He pled guilty to the crime and was later sentenced to death. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
Today's most popular video games take place in dangerous post-apocalyptic landscapes. But are these games doing enough to prepare our kids for the actual post-apocalyptic future we will all soon face?
Well, I think these games are quite effective at teaching our kids skills like finding shotgun ammo and leading elite squads of super soldiers.
But these aren't the advanced skills that they're going to need. They're going to need the more practical skills like how to find drinking water by collecting the morning dew and human skulls.
Or how to deal with depression when the sun is blocked out for 500 years by a cloud of radioactive dust.
Absolutely. Now, that's the type of knowledge these kids are going to need when their world has been turned into a brutal hellscape.
But these kids said that they know how to find items to barter at weapon shops and how to use medicine packs to heal zombie bites.
The games make it all seem deceptively simple. I mean, in the future, a kid's not going to be able to kill a six-foot-long irradiated beetle just by pressing a few buttons, and he's going to have to get down there with an axe and hack and hack and hack.
This is the Onion News Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear. The future's coming, to a future near you. It's not going to be too long. Here we have tiny CubeSats set to explore deep space. Small and economical CubeSats already eye our planet from orbit. But such Bantam craft are about to start pushing out into deep space, helping researchers study and explore the moon, asteroids, and other distant bodies. CubeSats are an exciting new tool that will enable new kinds of measurements to be made, and in some cases, whole new missions to be done, said Robert Stahel of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, who led a 2013 study investigating the feasibility and potential of interplanetary CubeSats. That they better get on it because everybody else is doing it already anyway. All right. The basic building block of CubeSats is a cube measuring 4 inches, 10 centimeters, on each side. Satellites that consist of just a single such block are known as 1U, short for one unit. CubeSats that combine 2 or 3 of them are 2U and 3U, respectively. So it's just like a loaf of bread. You know, you're sending these up and they're doing a whole bunch of them. I was reading where they had SpaceX had sent up a bunch already. And the one that, the other aircraft, orbital launching service of we buy Russian engines, you know, it blew up on the pad. And I think there was 20, 30 CubeSats are on that got destroyed. So I'm going, they go, yeah, whatever. We'll build more on the assembly line. Got a big rack full of them. So there is a lot of stuff coming, and it's just all about telemetry. You know, let's look that up. You say big words like that, and you want to know what they mean. Let's say it. Telemetry. Telemetry. Because they always said the telemetry of this and the telemetry of that, and we got the telemetry of who gives a crap. All right, here we go. Telemetry is the highly automated communications process by which measurements are made and other data collected at remote or inaccessible points and transmitted to receiving equipment for monitoring. The word is derived from Greek roots tele, which means remote, and metron, which is measure. All right, so it's remote measurement. Telemetry. Well, the telemetry is coming from all kinds of places to all kinds of places. And it's all and we are part of, you know, like Verizon is telemetry for the man. You know, they're going, yeah, we need remote measuring of the mood. The mood. First winds. You know, da 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 da. Yeah, no, that's an aerial thing. Little Mermaid. If you had little kids, you know what I mean. But the so telemetry from us is what's helping manage the livestock on the ranch of We Rule You. You know, I was talking to a friend yesterday, and she was saying that she's having a problem with her mailbox. She lives in a 1900s, 1920s neighborhood when it was built, and they all have big porches. You know, it's a nice Indiana small town where you got big porches, and they have the mail slot in your wall or your door, you know, and the mailman would come up and they just, you know, dump it. Well, there's some rule or something that if you ever move it, you know, you got some freestanding whatever, then that's it forever and always, and they don't have to use the other one for something. I mean, it's, you know, but she lived in this nice home, and it had this concrete thing with a, you know, Ace Hardware 10 box kind of mailbox, she didn't like, and she went back traditional to what, you know, a lot of her neighbors have it. You know, and the post, I go, no, we don't want to use that one. You know, well, why? That's the one I want to use, and it's what was here before. And I'm like, no, your mailbox is ours. You're not allowed to move it. You're not allowed to touch. You're not allowed to change. You're not allowed. She goes, whoa, what? She asked me this, and I go, yeah, I remember. You know, you buy the mailbox, you put it up, but no other company, nobody can touch it. It's a felony. You're not allowed to. They own your mailbox even though you bought it. I mean, you know, it's a government thing, you know, because they can. And she goes, Ernie, you're right. It's just because they can. I go, yeah, they have no repercussions. They got like a line that says right here, we can whatever, you know. So she's going, you know, I'm screw them. I'm going totally online. So she called all her bills. She called all her utilities. She called all her, I don't know, whatever, credit cards or whatever. And she says, look, we're just doing everything online. So I go, you know, Derek Slopey, he is the IT guy for a company. It's called Traveling Mailbox, I think. It's Traveling Mail or something like that. You set up this service, like if you're retired, going around in your RV or you're on trips or you travel a lot or whatever, you just go, you know what? I have this address. All of your mail gets sent to them, and you can do mail forwarding to them. You're done. Well, once they get it, what do they do with it? Well, they can, you know, store it for you, forward it for you. They can even open it. They can scan it in the PDF. They'll send you the outside of both sides of the envelope. They just sit there and go, boom, this is the PDF, the scanned in of what your mail is. And you go, okay. And you look at the PDF and you communicate with them. You go, and read this one, open this one, throw this one away, shred this one. You know, and you do that, and they take care of it for you. Boom, shakalaka, done. I go, wow, this is awesome. That's a nice service. You know, the thing is, though, is, of course, you know, the man's going to be, and we want to see everything that he gets, and, you know, which just happens at the post office anyway, so, you know, what's the difference? But the, so this is just one other way of just bypassing the man coming to your front door all the time. You say, you know what? I don't need you to come anymore. I refuse, because they refuse to deliver it. They're not giving it to you. They're just, you know, playing to go, oh, okay. Well, we'll just, you know, I don't need you anymore. What are you going to do? Not get your mail? Yep. And alternatives. I'm just, you know, what happened? The man, government, the car, lone stretch of highway, sun setting in the rear view, and you'll just see the silhouette of the little car just starting to slip back over the horizon, and you forgot they were even there. One more meter back. One more mile back. One more parsec back. It's just going back over the horizon, and you're just going to not remember they were there. And they will scream. Those won't leave us alone. They will go, we want everybody to know why they need us. There's going to be some war. There's going to be some something because they have to. So what do we look at here? Yep. How China and Russia are teaming up to erode American dominance. They'll never succeed because we're America. Yeah. China has dispatched a convoy of warships for its first ever naval exercises in the Mediterranean, together with a Russian flotilla. The drills demonstrate a strengthening bond between Moscow and Beijing, who, despite having no formal military alliance, see their combined might as a counterbalance to U.S. power. Both countries have been modernizing their armed forces, and while their equipment still lags behind top-end Western technology, experts say they are closing the gap. Xi Jinping came to power in 2012, vowing to dedicate his presidency to building the Chinese dream of the great rejuvenation of the Chinese nation. Part of that dream involves a major overhaul of China's 2.3 million man military, which is three times the size of Russia's, but which critics say has become bloated, corrupt, and unfit for battle. Well, they're just going to whip them boys into shape. You know, and what are we going to do about it? You know, I'm just, if you live by the sword, what happens to you? Now you're going to die by the sword. Well, they got a bunch of swords that they're doing around the world targeted at the hegemonic domination of we kind of rule you from the Western world, and they don't like it none too much. So where are we going? I don't know. We got to take care of ourselves.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
You can put the Liberty Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Junk with a laser cannon, and it's for getting space junk. We're going to shoot stuff into space that we determined to be junk. How do you know it's junk? Oh, because we said so. You know, it's like it looks junky to me. And your not allowedism thing that you got up there, it looks like junk to us. You didn't get the we're not junk permit. No, hold on. It's not to kill aliens or rebel civilization. It's to clean up a huge mess. There's just a bunch of stuff in space. If anything rivals the human drive for exploration, it is the apparent need to leave a spectacular plume of trash in our wake. In space, the problem is becoming acute. Decades of discarded satellites and unchecked collisions have left some 3,000 tons of debris in orbit. That's roughly 15 blue whales, 600 elephants, or 1,500 cars. Mankind's slovenly ways threaten our continued use of space-based satellites, which have become a core component of modern technological infrastructure. You've probably used those satellites dozens of ways so far today. Have you sent a text, watched TV, used GPS, checked the weather? If you'd like to keep doing these things, astronomers will soon need to find a way of tidying up low Earth orbit. In that region, between 100 and 1,250 miles above the planet, mere flecks of paint, of which there are many, travel with sufficient force to sever electrical wires, dent spacecraft, and kill astronauts. So their whole thing is, yeah, we got a lot of space junk up there. We need to clear it up. And we're going to use a ground-based laser telescope and tracking system to be able to zap it down to itty-bitty zappets. Are we going to be zapping paint? I mean, you know, and hitting them with a laser is not going to make, like, more junk? I mean, what are they doing? You know, a lot of times the laser, I think what happens if you hit it as it's coming to you, the impact of the laser and the gases put off and the melting of and the energy, it kind of creates a deceleration and it starts to fall and kind of stuff. You know, there's a lot of things that you can do. You do physical nets, satellites that, you know, go scoop them up or something, or you just wait and they just come down. You know, after a while, it just, you know, they kind of decay and, you know, slow down and just go into orbit anyway. I mean, into the atmosphere. But I'm going, yeah, we should stop putting junk up. So what does SpaceX do? We just take our boosters and re-land them and use them again. Na, 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 na. So how much stuff is there up there that the newer machines are leaving? I don't know. But I'm not feeling warm and fuzzy about who's going to do this. You know, is it the government? You know, let's see, who's going to do it? Yep, it's going to be, you know, with our tax money, I'm sure. Okay, we got that going for us. Verizon to buy AOL for $4.4 billion. AOL shares soar, of course. I mean, you know. We need to understand this. The transaction will be completed this summer and will take the form of a tender offer followed by a merger, after which AOL will become a wholly owned subsidiary of Verizon, the announcement said. To do what? What the heck is AOL? Verizon's vision is to provide customers with a premium digital experience based on a global multi-screen network platform, whatever the heck that means. This acquisition supports our strategy to provide a cross-screen connection for consumers, creators, and advertisers to deliver that premium customer experience, blah, 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 blah. I have no idea what all that means. You know, let's go into the full story and see what they're talking about. Because they're going to provide, you know, it's just, you know, blah, blah, BS. I smell BS on this one. For Verizon to spend $4.4 billion for who the hell is AOL anyway? You know, that's one thing. The AOL has, we have probably about 100 subscribers over the years to Freedom's Phoenix or Email Dispatch that are AOL. And we got to tell them. You know, we go, look, AOL will not allow Freedom's Phoenix Dispatch to go in. AOL, the CI, whoever, said, you know what? You're not allowed. So AOL does not take Freedom's Phoenix Email Dispatch. Because they can. They just go, nope, we don't do it. Now, one of the benefits out of the thousands of people that we have that are subscribers, only about 100 of them have AOL accounts, but I mean, you know, that it's still the point. So why would Verizon want them? I don't know, because they block Freedom's Phoenix, I guess. So I'm just going, what the heck is this about? You know, it doesn't say anything. There's really nothing here. We're going to be and give you better, and because we looked over, and then it's like market crap. If you look at AOL over the last 5 years, we turned the company around. We outperformed the S&P 500 the past 5 years. Who cares? Yeah, let's see. We were at nothing, and now we're just a little bit above nothing. You know, this is, I don't know what the tech is. What is the tech that they have? Does the deal make sense? All right, here's get down to it, down at the bottom. David Bank, managing director of RBC Capital Markets, told CNBC's Squawk Box he believes the merger makes sense for Verizon because it expands the company's digital advertising reach. To whom? AOL has what? This is less about content than about a lot of these mature media platforms needing new ad tech, Bank said. Our sense of the industry is when you look at these partnerships, what's driving them is not so much the content as having a platform for programmatic. Programmatic. That means advertising, but programmatic. That's a new word. Nevertheless, Craig Moffett of Moffett Nathan Research told CNBC's, see, CNBC's Squawk Boxes tell you right there, they're just PR for, you know, the deal, whatever it is. You know, they don't know what the hell's going on. The deal might not move the needle for Verizon. AOL, when this deal is finished, is going to be something like 1% of the enterprise value of Verizon, so it's a small transaction. He said $4.4 billion. Is small. They don't tell you anything about what they get. Not a damn thing. You know, I'm getting AOL because it what? Because it what? What? They like the sound of. I mean, you know what is AOL? Nothing. There's something weird going on there. All right, now here in Phoenix, a listener sent this to. They wanted to make sure that we put this up. 3D printing night. Lightning, 3D printing, Night Lightning, I guess is the name of the event. Talks edition. I have no idea what this means. Welcome to the first ever 3D printing night at Local Motors. To kick off this regular event, we are doing a speaker style event. Our speakers will each do 10 to 20 minute talks on anything and everything 3D printing. We're bringing together people from all skill levels. Come unite with the Phoenix 3D Printing Community, Thursday, May 14th, from 7 to 10. Huh. That might be interesting. Introduction to 3D printing and build your own 3D printer. All right, that's one thing. Printing a model of a Toyota 22RE. Wow, cuz. 3D printing in libraries. Yeah, I'm going to go visit, you know, library and make my Liberator gun. Yep. 3D printed car. Yeah, okay, this might be something to go just check out and see what's up. If I got absolutely nothing better to do and somebody might want to go, I might want to go to this thing. That'd be cool.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It's because I can. Let's go ahead and go to this story. This is keeps getting, you know, coming up. I a lot of people call me about this. Russell Brand wants to trademark the Lovolution, you know, the Revolution logo. Now, it's, you know, it's just a reverse in spell how he does it different in the way we do it and kind of don't care and I'm whatever, you know. And when he did his book with that on there, I go, Ernie, you got to go get some. What am I going to do? You know, that's what I wanted. Is this to be used everywhere? We'll define it. It's, you know, he'd go and do something stupid, which he knew that eventually he would, and he did. You know, this is what's going on. Revolution against the system, against the man, against capitalism, against, and we're going to have us a Lovolution. All right, fine. Lovolution, you know, without violence, kind of, you know, I'm hip to that. Though we applaud his general political nonsense, you know, this is againstcronycapitalism.org by Nick Sorrentino. Though we applaud his general political nonsense, he advocates statism, which only perpetuates the very corporatism he says he is against. In the end, it seems that people like Brand just can't get over the hump to realize that the voluntary exchange of goods and services is the most just way an economy and world can work. That capitalism itself is just far more just than statism. And what we have is this crony capitalism thing. It's not really capitalism where people can just do what, just leave me aloneism. I mean, you know, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, so what does he do? You want to actually make the world a better place, Brand? Advocate for free markets, free banking, and a gold standard. Otherwise, you're just part of the problem. And now he jacks Ron Paul's open source logo with a trademark. Way to go, dude. Go make some fiat money. These days, one doesn't even get 30 pieces of silver. Well, you know, the thing is that what he's trying to do, he wants to copyright the revolution, lovolution, reverse love thing, and so that he can sell merchandise and doing whatever. And I don't care. I really don't. Everybody's on. I go, ah, fine. Well, he's going to, I know. Well, he's going to, I know. I don't care. As long as he doesn't prevent us. So my thing was, as I'm going, you want to see Ernie get involved in this? You want to see some political activism? Let him build up and do whatever, and then there will be something, any one of you or myself or some, there will be a time to where someone will put it on a book, which they have, another book, which they have, on hats, clothes, shirts, lingerie, whatever, it's going to have it all over it. That's fine. You know, then we'll do it, and he'll do it. When we do it, will the lawyers come after us and say, ah, you're selling your trademark? Kind of like, oh, sue me. Let's go to court. I want to have this discussion of the originating creator and kind of we did. And they say, I can't. And you tell me how long Russell Brand would last. An opinion. Just public opinion. Just PR. It's not going to be a law thing. It's going to be, ew, don't get his communist kind of state-supporting statist, I got the long arm of the law, says what you can and can't, or something that I ripped off. Don't get his. Get, you know, ours or none or something. You see my point? You know, it's, you know, what's the solution to irresponsible speech? More speech? I mean, you know, I don't care. My thing is that when he starts using the force of government to prevent others from using artwork that he didn't even come up with, I'm going, yeah, he's not going to win this one. Now, he may want to, you know, make overtures and they'll, you know, make the call, or sooner or later someday we'll say and kind of, we'll give you a whole crap load of money. You know, that may be what the sellout is. They go, for $1 million, you give up any and all and you say and sign over and cuz as if I had anything to do. And you know what it'd be like? It'd be like going to the Native Americans and giving them trinkets for Manhattan. And they go, okay. I mean, not that I claim he knows. You want to give me some? All right, all right, all right. You know, but yeah, that's not. There's no claim. I mean, it's open. It's like the peace sign. That was the point that I wanted it to be. It's just like the peace sign. You know, a lot of people don't even know where the peace symbol came from. You know what it is? I did not know this. It was, it's flag. As I memory serves, it's the flag positions for N and D, nuclear disarmament. So, you know, the guys, when they do the flags, you know, and they hold them up and they do it, it's like Navy signals, you know, from ship to ship kind of thing. Well, straight up and down, I think one of them is N and one of them is D. So you have straight up and down is a vertical line in the circle, and then the arms down at like a 30, 45 degree angle, you know, holding the flag, that's the diagonal lines in the peace symbol. So the peace symbol is really just ND, nuclear disarmament, I think. You know, something like that. And so how do you trademark that or something? Well, I guess you could. But their intent from the beginning was, no, this is, you know, it's peace, man. We just, you know, nuclear disarmament was kind of the mantra. I guess this is in the 50s and 60s and so on. So I'm going, okay. So I go for that. You know, it's just be everybody thing. Nope. Got to trademark it. You know, they got, and I was, a lot of people got on my butt about it. They go, Ernie, you got it. You got it. You got it. So if I go, you want to kill a movement, try to control it. Try to capitalize. You want to kill a movement. You want to kill an opinion. You want to kill, you know, public, you know, opinion. You want to, you know, kill just a mood. You want to kill a generation, a line of thought. Try to control it. Brand's trying to control it. It's going to be Russell's brand as opposed to ours. So don't worry about it. I don't. It's going to work out just fine. And it'll be, you know, some challenge to him doing this. And what's he going to stand on? I you know, his whole, you know, against the system, out of the system, not getting the system. He's using the system in every which way he can to support his opportunity to whatever. I'm going, and hopefully he'll learn. I really hope that he'll learn. He represents another generation of hopefully they get it. So I don't want to go at him with anything other than love. I mean, seriously, because if you do, you know, they get entrenched, or, you know, he'll just abandon the whole thing, or he won't learn anything, and they won't progress, they won't go to the next stage, they won't understand, they won't learn. Well, who's doing this? Well, the corporate lawyer suit types that kind of, you know, if you sign here and we got, and the plan is, you know, they may be trying to submarine whatever effort he's got, which, you know, not like I care, but I mean, you know, this is, I just don't think he understands. So we explain it to him. And it's getting explained already. I mean, article after article keeps getting sent to me of how he's just so counter to everything that he's been saying he represents. So I'm just going, yeah, this is kind of what I figured would happen. It's going to get worse. Because when one of us, and there will be somebody, well, it's like the Levolution car badges. You know, pull that up. You know, we'll look at that. You know, Revolution car badge. I love these things. Revolution car badges. Now, they asked me, they go, well, do you mind? I go, well, how many do I get? Well, as long as I get them, you know, I get one, you know, give me, and then we'll worry about it. You know, you can buy me off. This right there, these Revolution car badges. You know, you just put them right on your car. They have adhesive on the back, two-sided tape that you just peel it off, and it goes right on your car, just like a Toyota thing or something, you know. And they got various ones now, you know, different designs. But their primary one is the Levolution logo. And I'm going, okay, so is Russell Brand going to go after them? Are they afraid? You know, are they worried about it? I, you know, Donna, go ahead and call the, we had him on before, this Revolution car badge. Remember that? Go, just go ahead and have him on. I want to talk to him about the Russell Brand thing. And I'll go, you know, if they come after you, we'll make a thing out of it. Yeah, it'll be a thing. We'll have a thing. I'm going, oh, Russell, you want to play? You want to play? You want to go up against the Revolution? Really? But we'll take the opportunity to help explain it to them. And relax. Tony. And of course, the lawyers get involved, and then it'll be all kinds of fun. Yuck, 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 yuck.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollars being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with a chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Okay, I'm right back. I want to talk about this one. All right. Okay. We'll build up to it because it can. All right. We've been talking about the safety network. John is available. We're going to get him at the top of the hour. We're going to go ahead and have him come on. And John is a blogger for the John Ferguson is a blogger for the Safe Network, and it's, you know, it's right, they got the hardware ready, they're, you know, everybody's sitting here, they're just, you know, tweaking and doing, and kind of take your time. I keep telling them, I go, I just want to know, I don't care, you know, a month from now, a week from now, a day from now, an hour from now, a year from now, I don't care, I just want it. You know, if it does what you guys are promising, if you're even any freaking anywhere near promising me whatever, I'm all over it. Because Germany It's just a story comes out, probably Reuters, Yahoo puts it up. Germany gives huge amount of phone text data to U.S. Critics have accused Chancellor Angela Merkel's staff of giving the nod to the BND, whatever that is, to help the NSA spy on European firms and officials. They also say officials lied about the prospects of a U.S.-German no-spy deal before the 2013 election. Polls show the scandal is starting to hurt popular Merkel, whose office is responsible for oversight of intelligence. Citing confidential documents, Die Zeit Online reported, which is a publication, online reported on Tuesday that of about 220 million pieces of metadata gathered per day, some 1.3 million pieces per month go to the NSA. The data includes raw material from phone calls and text messages, which shows contact details and times of activity, but does not contain content. Oh, well, then I guess we're okay then. In particular, it sends raw material on foreign communications in crisis regions. It is questionable as to whether this practice is covered by German laws, blah, 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 blah. Oh, and we only send this much, like I believe anything they say anyway. So this is Germany. Other countries are supplying a massive... Now, I remember this being a big deal in the 90s. If you ever saw the John Travolta, Hugh Jackman movie, Swordfish, well, Halle Berry, and it was a really good movie, Swordfish. In there, the reason that the hero had done time in jail, he was a hacker, he had done time because he exposed Carnivore. Now, Carnivore is a real program the FBI was doing to just, scoop up everything. And it was, when PGP came in, everybody's encrypting their email, for biscuit recipes and stuff. I mean, because they were just like, you title it, Durka Durka Jihad, assassination plot, violent, whatever. And they just they get tagged and they just have to process it, damn it, because we got to see what kind of biscuits he's making. So people would do that just to gum up the machine. But the whole thing was, is that they were already starting to do this. Now, in Europe, it was called Epsilon or Echelon. I should look that up. Let's go ahead and look that up, because we can. Now, Echelon, I think it's Echelon Internet. I'll probably bring up a wiki. I go wiki. Now, what this program was, Echelon, wiki, I just read the first paragraph. Now, I remember that when this was first being announced and going on. Echelon, originally a code name, is now used in global media and popular culture to describe a signals intelligence collection and analysis network operated on behalf of five signatory nations to the UK-USA security agreement. Australia, Canada, New Zealand, United Kingdom, and the United States. God, that isn't the boys. All right. Referred to by a number of other abbreviations, including blah, 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 Five Eyes, and all this other stuff. It has also been described as the only software system which controls the download and dissemination of the intercept of commercial satellite trunk communications. It was created in the early 1960s to monitor the military and diplomatic communications of the Soviet Union and its Eastern Bloc allies during the Cold War, and was formally established in the year 1971. Now, Echelon, this is everything. Satellite communication, they wanted to get some. Now, the problem was, where this became a big deal, is on the floor of Parliament in the United Kingdom, some member of Parliament got up and said, "Hey, we know what you're doing, America, you buttheads." What was going on is there was a lot of contract negotiations in the private sector for, I think it was Airbus was doing something. So France and England, Airbus, and there's like a collaboration between several countries to, go after Boeing or something. Anyway, Airbus has the company. Well, what was going on is a lot of these financial agreements and negotiations and bidding. If you knew what the other company, your competitors, bid, well, then that gives you a big giant advantage whether you want to bid under it or not. Well, this information that was available to United States America government, the business of America's business. So what were they doing? They were using their intelligence surveillance abilities, through satellites and faxes and emails and all this other stuff to be able to give them an advantage in negotiations of contracts and bidding for making widgets and so on. Well, then, the intelligence agencies of country B is knowing what A is doing, the C, and they started, you know, openly complaining about it. Well, the movie Swordfish kind of mentions some of this stuff, and I remember when this argument was going on. So while you're all worried about and NSA and Bill Binney said and Edward Snowden and all this kind of stuff 10, 15 years before it, we already knew it was an issue. They were doing this countrywide. Everybody, certainly in these five countries, started, and the Cold War, you know, the Eastern Bloc of, I mean, you know, and who's left? You know, so this is not like a big secret to me. You know, we're like, yeah. And when we get finally our own alternative encrypted and distributed data, you know, safe network, which we're going to talk about in the next hour with John Ferguson. So this is why I know. I don't think I know. I know. Systems over here, we have Prism, Echelon, Carnivore, Dishfire, Stone Ghost, Tempura. Yeah, I mean, it goes on and 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 on. The system has been reported in a number of public sources. One of the earliest reports to describe the program, codename Echelon, was Duncan Campbell's 1988 article, Somebody's Listening, published in the New Statesman. You know, wow, they did, you know, this is, and political implications were investigated by a committee of the European Parliament in 2000-2001. And then you have James Bamford, you know, wrote a book on NSA that included yada, yada, yada. And then, of course, you had Tragedy and Hope talking to Bill Binney in their interview. Go to tragedyandhope.com and you'll see the Bill Binney interview, and I'll tell you a lot about this stuff. So I was a young activist as this stuff was coming out. So from the beginning, I'm going, well, of course they are. You know? All right. Let's go to some other stuff. What time is it? Yeah, okay, 2 minutes. I got to get to this. I pinky swear that I was going to do this one. All right. Oh, George Zimmerman got shot at and wounded in a road rage thing. He didn't fire anything, but I bet he's glad wish he had his gun. I don't know, but he got shot at and shot. They keep, now, what was the headline? Oh, Phil Zimmerman involved in shooting. Well, somebody on the freeway shot him. Bet he wish he had a gun. Eh, whatever. Okay, here's the story. Chelsea Clinton could take on the role of first lady if Hillary wins, White House experts say. Now, this has happened before where daughters have done this. Woodrow Wilson, his wife, died, and for like a year, his 28-year-old daughter took on the role of first lady, whatever that is, you know, before he remarried in 15. But this is Chelsea Clinton. Okay. So what about Bill? I mean, it's going to be, you know, you almost want Hillary to be president just so you can have, you know, what about Bill jokes or something. You know, see, the whole presidency is going to be, what's Bill doing? You know, well, they don't want him in because what's going to happen? We're going to have Chelsea Clinton's moving to the White House. Didn't she get married? You know, Hillary's campaign is going to be the popularity of the first lady, which is her daughter. No, you can't make this stuff up. You know? All right. Let's get into this new device. New device allows for skin biopsies in under 5 minutes without anesthetic. It's just, you know, it looks like a 3D printer or something. Goes on, boom, and it takes a biopsy, it sends it in, cancer diagnosed, kind of did it in 5 minutes, done. Done. Might as well have medical tricorders, Star Trek kind of stuff. Okay, now there's a Ouchquidic going on between Paul Craig Robert, which was in the Reagan administration, I think, and Seymour Hersh is talking about, you know, bin Laden and that Obama made it up and it was all BS and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, Paul Craig Roberts goes, I don't believe Hersh's story because I think Osama bin Laden was already dead. You know, this is just, I mean, not only was it made up, it was really made up. You know, so it's just which version, like JFK assassination conspiracy to who, whatever. You know, who didn't kill Osama bin Forgotten? Okay. So that's a 3-week thing. 3 weeks. We'll wait. The brutal reality of life in China's most polluted cities. Now, this is a for real thing. I mean, you know, China is just polluted as hell. So what are they gonna do? Well, they're not going to forego the industrialization, you know, at national security thing. But I think they're going to be, you know, because it's just demand of the people, just, you know, for health, just so they don't die. You know, so they're going to go ahead and bring on, and that's what I think is going to give the idea of thorium reactors a new wind in their sails. That is a very interesting technology. It's nuclear. It's a lot more common. It's not as radioactive, and it goes from a, you know, much cooler temperatures, and it works. So, you know, we'll see if China does that. They do. Ouch.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Welcome to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Just say yes. What we're going to do is I'm going to go ahead and take you into a different world. This is going to be the world of ones and zeros, to where we can all get access to information. And I want to ask a lot of questions, because there's a lot of ways that I want to use this kind of technology. The biggest thing that comes to mind right off the bat is one thing. That I'm allowed to share information with other people. That I'm allowed to have some kind of a relationship with someone that's not controlled by someone else. It's not penalized. It's not, whistleblowers are not targeted before they even get the words out. That we have individuals are able to communicate with others privately. That we can have information that's always available and doesn't move. That we can have information up that we can use for the future and archive and make available, and it never be taken down, and we don't have to keep hunting for it as a takedown. Where is it today? Now, kind of, I need to link to it. Now, there's some other browsers and such that can interface where I can put hot links on the World Wide Web, that I can have embedded video that is stored on the safe network so that it's always there. We've been talking to people about that technology. I'll talk to John Ferguson about these very issues. Safe, S-A-F-E, crossroads.net. Or you can go forum.safenetwork.io, and of course madesafe.net. John Ferguson, hello, how are you?
Hello, Ernie. Pleasure.
We had met at the Texas Bitcoin Conference, didn't we?
Yes. Yeah, I talked to you a little bit there. Actually, I saw you at the one prior to that, and I've been at your place a couple of times too in passing.
So this is, we were talking about you starting to do something like this. You had not yet. I think you were encouraging me and me, you, or something for you to do a podcast, kind of like Let's Talk Bitcoin or Watch My Bit or Bitcoin Bit something, on the Safe Network, because there wasn't anybody in the space doing that. Is that kind of what you're taking on?
Exactly. You mentioned the Texas Bitcoin Conference. I live in South Texas, so I was able to go, and I haven't really followed Bitcoin closely in the last year. I can't say that. I listen to Let's Talk Bitcoin Network habitually. But I've really been into Project Safe. And I went to the Texas Bitcoin Conference because there were some people there I wanted to meet. Met John Barrett from Bitcoins and Gravy. Actually, he interviewed me and had me on his show. And I was looking for a way to, I'm really into this. What talents do I have to bring to the table? And I realized that it's a little hard to step in and go, well, what is this Safe Network and why? And why should I bother?
How'd you even know about it?
Well, I first heard David Irvine interviewed by you on your show a couple times. And I was really, really swept away by that. And then I listened to another interview with him on Brian Sovereign Show, Sovereign Tech, which was a really good in-depth interview. And I was hooked, got into the crowd sale, was right there with the formation of the Safe Network Forum, and it's been a great ride.
But now let me ask you about that, because James Babb and I are, you know, asking the same question.
Okay.
I bought, you know, we got Bitcoin worth of it, and it was some in the form of master coin that I have, and so on. I'm afraid to touch it because I have no idea what the how the heck I got these safe coins. Do you have a beat on this?
Oh, sure. Well, that is...
You're my new best friend. You're going to help me get it all set up and done, and I'm afraid, okay?
Well, so, you know, I can tell you what you've got now. As far as how that exactly is going to go when it's time to trade the tokens you have, which is called MadeSafe Coin, that's actually in the Bitcoin protocol under the Bitcoin blockchain on the master protocol, which is now accessed via the Omni wallet. And it's just a token.
Oh, it's just button. Okay, we got Are you able to walk me through it if I had somebody, had you help me?
Well, if you need to do anything with it right now, I don't know. I'm just letting all mine sit there too, because if I had a little more spare change, I'd be going out and buying it.
Well, what's it selling for now?
You know, I think it's fluctuates. Recently, I saw a post where somebody had gotten some at below the crowd sale price, which is a real steal. But there's people speculating, so it goes up and down and around.
Okay, so it's my retirement. All right.
How many
Bitcoin worth did you get?
It's going to turn into something, especially after some of the things I've discovered recently.
Before it launches, I want to get secured. Kind of, I know I got it. Here it is, mine. Because you know, I got like a sufficient quantity of. At the time, I got. David Irvine helped me. What happened was, I was in Panama when the crowd sale went, and I, you know, on April 22nd, I told him, I said, "This is going to go faster than you think, man." And he goes, "No. We got plenty of time. Don't worry about it. It'd be a 3-month thing. In the first month, you get kind of." I'm going, "Yeah." 5 hours later, it was done. I land in Las Vegas, and James Babb from Philadelphia calls. He goes, nah, you missed it, you know. And so Irvine was nice enough to go ahead and get me some, you know, like 60. Really, I was only going to get a couple of Bitcoin worth, and he went out and get me 6 Bitcoin worth. And I'm going, thank you, you know, that so I didn't, snubbed out of the thing, you know.
If you want to see it, you can download the
Omni
wallet.
See it, but I mean.
Okay, well, good.
So.
Then just look at it and go, ooh, how nice.
Look,
you know,
there it is, you know. I did.
Well, yeah, it's because. It's not SafeCoin yet. It is that's going to become SafeCoin when the network is up and running, and then you send that to a particular address.
Okay, now what we're talking about, so the audience understands what's going on. They did a crowd funding thing that people used Bitcoin. You know, I guess that was the only way you could do it, wasn't it? It was Bitcoin, and you go ahead and you buy. It was like a crowdfunding thing. Well, it just went stupid. You know, right away, you have all this Bitcoin in there, and it translates into so many safe coins. It's the cryptocurrency that is the incentive for the network. Now, this is what the genius is about this network. Now, I'm not sure that originally, as he planned on doing the safe network and all the services that it provides, that he was planning on having a cryptocurrency as a financial incentive for being on it.
I verified that with him personally. I'm writing a particular article where I messaged David Irvine and asked that question because I didn't want to speak false. Actually, early on, they did consider making a token. You know, since the early days of it, it's like, well, there really needs to be some way for people to exchange their resources.
Yeah, be rewarded, you know, in some way, have some kind of transact currency value for
that. Yeah, I mean, if I provide resources, I need to be able to redeem that for services somehow. And they have looked at various things. So there's been some idea of that, though it really, Bitcoin coming along changed the whole perspective on how such things would be used. And it's just a whole different deal now.
Well, that's when we come back. We got quite a bit in the first one. I just want to make sure people understand this concept. why would you do this new thing? I mean, security and so on is great, but a lot of people are just more about convenience. Hey, I just want to get my grandma's picture of her vacation or whatever. Well, there's an incentive for you to do this. The incentive is that you get paid. Like Bitcoin, you mine Bitcoin. Well, this is like you're providing data and bandwidth and get rewarded.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Okay, John, once the music hits, I'm going to just turn you down because I got to finish up. I'm looking at the clock and it's got to be done off. Okay. What are some of the, let's make some notes here, some of the things that you want to make sure we talk about.
Sure. Well, I'd like to finish talking. You mentioned the Texas Bitcoin Conference, and basically that was key to how it evolved into what I'm doing. But actually, you played a part in that too. I'd like to play that out and then actually lay out what it is that I'm trying to do. And we can talk about the virtues of the SAFE network and SAFECOIN. I'm pretty versed on all of that.
Well, this is one thing. This is what we're doing behind the scenes. Derek Slopey, and we were working with Daniel on getting the hardware, and he's like, yeah, I got the hardware ready to go. It's just when they finish the software part of the kind of we can't ship until it's plug and play and done. So,
right.
We're ready to have, for the past year, we've been working on making sure that we have all of the background and the interface done with our site so that when we load up the SAFE network with Freedom's Phoenix of 300-400 gig worth of whatever, that we have the three machines, it's loaded on, we have Maine, Washington, D.C., and Phoenix, so we got a geographical spread there. We have guys that are, incentivized to make this thing work and can have real good input. They're a bunch of computer geeks. So when we go, I'm like, oh, let's rock. So that's what we're waiting on. And then we'll go ahead and talk about, we'll get into Texas Bitcoin and the start of this. But main thing I want to do is understand and have you comment on the SAFECOIN itself. All right, here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Because I'm having a good time, having a good time. I'm a shooting star leaping through the sky.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm here in Hancock. Yeah, we're in the 8 minutes between the hours, I can get some work done. I almost missed it. Donna's like, you're 30 seconds, run. I was cutting drain pipe for the aquaponic wicking bed kind of doing thing, because I can. So we're getting ready in a lot of different ways. And one of the things is I've really been emphasizing, for years I've been screaming about the ability to do what we're talking about here with the SAFE network. And it is, it was Rafael Rodriguez from the Texas Bitcoin Conference over a year ago. He said, you need to talk to this David Irvine guy. He sounds just like you. I met him in Berlin. And he was so we started talking, I understand. This is way bigger than people realize. But what was the incentive? When Bitcoin came out, he'd already been working on this a couple of years, and he understood that there was a need for an incentive, that somebody, why would you do, devote time and resources and bandwidth to supply this network. I mean, it's cool and you want to use it and be part of it, but there has to be some financial incentive. And you looked at Bitcoin and it exploded across the planet. Within a few years, they had more computing power than Google. Many times, dozens of times, more computing power than Google. It was rivaling, governments. All the governments put together. Oh, my God. The people have risen up. They are Skynet. They're going to kick Skynet's butt. All right, now what? Well, what if we take and use the same model and financial incentives for people to be part of the SAFE network, and the reward that they get is, you know, some kind of token that can be exchanged, or exchanges out there that will deal with this, converted into dollar, back into Bitcoin, Bitcoin to SAFE, whatever. But the point is that you're incentivized for providing the infrastructure for the network. That's what made Bitcoin launch. So this is the same kind of model that's being done. John, give your thoughts on that and how you see it.
Well, you know, there's a couple things to remember on this. One is that the purpose of the SAFE network, SafeCoin actually serves the SAFE network. So it's about the network, but SafeCoin is a cool part of it because there's a few things. One is because of the way the consensus is reached on who owns what in terms of SafeCoin, it's basically scalable. Infinitely scalable, and it transacts at network speed, which should be pretty close to instantaneous, but when it's done, and it'll be quite fast, and it'll get faster the more the network is used. So the more SafeCoin is used, the more people are involved in it, the faster it will transact. Now, the really neat thing that I find, well, there's many, I wrote a whole post on it regarding the ruminations on the beauty of SafeCoin on the forum. Anybody who wants to check it out, I list these things. But one of them that's really great is that the creation of SafeCoin is going to be spread out in very small portions all over the planet in the hands of anyone who wants to load the software and participate in the network. And that by participating, by providing bandwidth and a little bit of storage space and CPU power, which you need in order really to be able to interact with the network anyway, you'll earn some SafeCoin. So SafeCoin is going to be popping up in small portions all over the world, and people are going to go, well, what can I do with this? Well, one thing is you can buy resources from the network in order to use the network more thoroughly. You can exchange it in any way you want with whoever you want. It's anonymous. Now, as far as actually the ability of the network to exchange SafeCoin, you can send it around like putting cash in the mail, receiving cash in the mail. Exchanging, in other words, both sides, you know, the give and take, actually, the only thing the SAFE network is natively does is exchange for resources. It gives participants SafeCoin for supplying resources to the network, and participants spend SafeCoin to the network in order to access further resources. So,
okay. Now, wait a minute. Wait. Define the resources. Let me give you an example.
An individual supplies computer processing power, bandwidth, and storage space to the network. And as that proves to be useful to the network, the network rewards participants with SafeCoin. So that everybody's going to be getting little bits of SafeCoin all over the place. Now, if you want to store data on the network, it requires spending some SafeCoin.
Okay, now what about accessing information?
Well, accessing information is free.
Okay.
Anything that's stored on the network, the public data, you can call it up, or you know, if you have the keys to access that data, you can access it free.
Okay, let me give you a perfect example. Okay,
mm-hmm.
We have Mox News had 65,000 videos over years that he accumulates all this information and perspective on C-SPAN and news. He edited 30 hours of news a day, and he goes through and he's like has you know two stations on three DVRs so that's six you know feeds of different channels and times and news programs. All he did. All of a sudden, YouTube, with no excuse, no copyright violate, no commercial, he's keeping his nose clean, but he had a perspective that the man's bad, is bad in a bunch of ways, and they said, you know what, and you're done. We have Luke Radowski from We Are Change. They go, you know what, you can't make money off our YouTubes anymore, and YouTube is not going to be sending your announcements to your couple hundred thousand subscribers every time you got a video, and they didn't see it, and kind of, and you're done. We have Google, which owns YouTube now. Google cuts off the ad revenue from antiwar.com, and you're done. So I'm going, they're shutting down the internet for exactly the kinds of information and perspective and truth and whistleblowing and observation that our revolution and people that know what's up need it for. That was the whole point. So you're going, okay. So now I'm going, all right, I wish to have access to information. I can put up a video. I know it's going to be there for freaking ever. They can't take it down. There's nothing to, for me to do that. I need to load it up somewhere. So I'm either loading it up on my own node or someone else's, and it's either, you know, I guess for my own, it's nothing, but I put it up. That costs something to put it up, a micro whatever.
Right.
Then I want to have download of that. That's free.
Yep.
Right? Okay.
It costs you a little bit of SafeCoin to buy a data, basically a block of data to put to the network. Say one SafeCoin per however many gigabytes. And then you have that in reserve. And then you go about your business, and that's subtracted from little bits at a time until you need more. And
okay, how am I seeding the SafeCoin network? I mean, do I got to?
Well, you purchase it directly.
With
SafeCoin.
Okay, how am I getting my SafeCoin?
Well, there's several ways. One is you can set up and run the node and go right ahead and access all the public data you want. And at that point, you'll be able to also have a SafeCoin address. And then you'll receive SafeCoin because you're contributing to the network, and then you can turn around. Or you can buy that SafeCoin from someone else and immediately be able to store all your
money. Okay, I need to buy me some SafeCoin to put up stuff to be safe. And then you just created a financial ecosystem. And then
it's incredible.
And then the man does what? I don't know. We're going to find out. John Ferguson, when we come back. The coin itself, this is one thing for people to understand. For you to participate in the ecosystem, as by setting up a node yourself, you're getting access to receive SafeCoin just from providing the memory and the bandwidth. And I'm going, okay, but I want to use more, buy more, store more, and get them what I got. And how do I get it? Well, there you go. You're in an exchange of some type. So where, and I got to go actually get the, are there SafeCoin wallets? Is it part of the protocol from the beginning on my system? Do I got a bank account kind of thing? How's this work?
Right. Well, you have it. You have a SafeCoin, basically, yes, a wallet. That's part of your account, a SafeCoin ID address that you accumulate SafeCoin in. And, I can't give you all the details of the interfaces and how that works. All that stuff is, it's coming along. But
okay.
It's provided for.
Well, I just need people to understand the ecosystem, because
sure.
The people that would do this, why would I set up this? Why am I doing it? Why? I don't care. Why? You know, well,
yeah.
When storage came out, you know, Sean Wilkinson, when he did his thing, I'm going, okay, so I need to know. Now, he gave me an HTML5 player that will embed, you know, this these files onto my site on the World Wide Web. So I'm going, all right, perfect example. I wish to promote this one video. All right, I'll load it up to the Safe Network, do a embed on Freedom's Phoenix on the World Wide Web, and it can access that information and play it, yes or no. Well, here comes Bitwave. Bitwave, you know, did at the hackathon there. They came up with an open source Chrome browser that can surf, grandma can go from World Wide Web to the Safe Network with the same browser and never know the difference. So I'm going, all right. So if I can embed to access to a file, a player to play on Freedom's Phoenix on the World Wide Web, a file that can never be moved around, and that's on, it comes from the Safe Network to feed it, I'm going, score, man. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So am I accurate in that?
As far as I know, yeah. MadeSafe has been working with Mozilla to execute a Firefox plugin to access directly. Now, something people should understand is that you can load up a client and access any public data for free. on the network. If you run a vault, in other words, you participate in the infrastructure of the network, then you earn SafeCoin, and then you can also, with that SafeCoin, place data on the network. And it only costs to put data on the network. It's then accessible for free forever.
Okay. Now, this is what this one point is what we really, really, really got to make sure everybody understands, so that they understand the power of this and the world-changing. Now, because it is pieced up, encrypted, and distributed across all these nodes, the attempt by the man or anyone else to be able to try and take it down, I mean, can even the person that put it up take it down? I mean, once it's up, right?
Right, right. It depends upon it's going to stay there forever. Whether it's accessible is the other matter. If you sacrifice the keys to get
today into it. Today at LRN.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Okay, now, you know, so that we understand this, is sum up what's going on here. We'll get confirmation from John Ferguson. Now, you can go and check out his offerings at safecrossroads.net, forum.safenetwork.io, and madesafe.net. But try safecrossroads.net, John Ferguson. Okay, this is what happens. If I'm able to take a file, and I give a lot of really good examples, I have a special edition called Ernie's Favorites. Now, on Freedom's Phoenix, if you go to special editions, and we'll be emphasizing, we're doing a reformatting to the front, you know, emphasize a lot of these different features and so on. But the main thing that I'm trying to do, I'm going, look, you know, this is a lot of good stuff that, you know, just, you know, staying power, you know, The Power of Nightmares, a BBC series that was just, you know, freaking how we get into this Islamophobic kind of, you know, whatever, somebody's going to kill us. Then you have The Power, you know, see what, Century of the Self. And this is all Bernays and, you know, Freud stuff and how they're controlling it in the whatever. Then you have, you know, there's a lot of things, cures for cancer, how to make, you know, hemp oil, how to do this, how to do things that I think are important. And I go, you know, a spider bite treatment. You know, I've used that. We get a lot of hits on that. So I'm going, let's go ahead and create a page that I have, and I go, here they are. Well, when you click in on that, the video keeps getting moved. They keep canceling it. They keep taking it down. They keep they, whoever they are. And I'm going, look, this is, I need stuff that's, for if it's that fleeting, if this kind of information and perspective, as that's why Freedom's Phoenix, we have the mid page. A lot of the, I go, why I got to go to mid page and then go to the article? I go, so that we can save some of it, you know, so that we can have the comments on that issue, so that we can have the graphic. We have, it's there for free. Freaking ever, because it's on my servers. Now, what if they came and kicked in the door and took the servers? You know, what if it's information that I want, a video that I want, if they keep moving, taking down, you're not allowed, like Mox News. So can I take information, put it up somewhere, a whistleblower puts it up, so get it somewhere, and it's there for freaking ever? And you might not want it there forever, so we need to ask John that. Now, to put it up, I'm going to pay a little bit to put it up. I know that 20 cents or something, you know, whatever it is. You know, it's not going to be much. So I put that up. The person that has the memory, that it's on a portion of their hard drive that supplies the memory and the bandwidth of people using it, gets paid. The more that they use it, the more they're going to get paid. And if I'm one of the first guys with a whole bunch of content up there, guess what? Hopefully I'm going to get paid. I'm like, nah. It's like Bitcoin early on. Now, what's the content you got? Well, people are going to start putting up content. They're just going to rip it from, hell, it's going to be movies. It's going to be, you know, whatever. It's going to be programs. It's going to be any. It's going to be BitTor on steroids. All right? So they put this stuff up. People go get it. It's free. Now, the bandwidth that you, to put it up, you pay, and you get paid for providing the resources for this. Now, John, my question is in this process of me going and getting it, what I'm hoping is going to be able to happen is not just be on the network, you know, which they're doing Mozilla. I remember we were talking to Nick Lambert from Safe. They're going, hey, man, they're working, as a little secret at the time. He's like, we're working with Mozilla Foundation and getting a plug-in with Firefox. You just use the same one going between the two. At the Texas Bitcoin Conference just a couple of months ago, know, there's guys in a weekend, they just met there, hey, we can do this open source browser of the Chrome open source portion that they created, a browser that could do World Wide Web, and grandma can go straight over the Safe Network, never even know the difference. Don't have to have a special, you know, Tor or Onion browser or something like that. So what this does is it provides the infrastructure to where you can have any data anywhere accessible to anybody for nothing. But you get paid for them making use of it. Now, that's one thing that I got to ask. If I'm putting stuff up and it's free for everyone, what is the revenue stream that's paying me? How am I getting paid in SafeCoin? Where does that money come from if it's free for people to get? How does that ecosystem work, John?
You mean as a like if you put up your Freedom's Phoenix things and people are accessing it?
Yeah, it's free for them to access.
It's free for them to access. Well, you know, there are various aspects of that which are yet to the Safe Exchange that you talked to Daniel Dabik not long ago. That will factor into how people get paid for content that they put. But essentially, anything that people have access to is free for them to access. Now, they may have to pay to get access. If you want to say, hey, you know, here's some files, give me a SafeCoin, and you get the keys to unlock it, that's one way you could get paid. There are subtleties here that I can't tell you I know all about. And I want to interject one thing here for everybody listening, that this is an extremely intricate network. The thinking that's gone into this is incredible to make it completely private, secure, and free, as in freedom. And so it's hard to plunge in from, you know, a fixed idea of how the internet works. So I just say that to, if anybody gets confused, you got to dig in and find out. I'd recommend listening to my first podcast on the Safe Crossroads website, Crossroads of Project Safe. That'll give you a grounding, and then carry on from there. And I give some pointers on, well, how do you, from where you're at, because people come at this from different angles. Some are very technically oriented. Some of them are just like, hey, I want to be able to be free. And
well,
I don't know anything about.
We were at the Texas Bitcoin Conference. You were, you know, you had listened to the show, and that's right. I remember you were saying we did the show with David. You go, oh, here's a, no, okay, I'm interested. And you wanted to, you know, because in the space, I mean, who else is doing this? So you're first to market, you win. And as you were, you know, developing the concept and the idea, what was it about it that inspired you? I mean, you're going, yeah, this is cool because what?
Well, it's because of the properties of the Safe Network itself. And of course, how SafeCoin works into that is just beautiful. But essentially, you're talking about the ability to have free communication that's unsnoopable, or, and as anonymous as you need, or also as provable. You can prove who you are very easily through the network. If you need to, you can make legal arrangements over a network like this, because cryptographic proofs are very easy to accomplish, but that same quality allows you to be as anonymous as you need to be. All of those things just dovetail with, well, actually, you know, there's been a lot of roundabout about net neutrality, and also on the safecrossroads.net website, I wrote an article, Net Neutrality and the Safe Network. But basically, the Safe Network provides a completely neutral medium to communicate through, like air. The air can't tell you, don't say that cuss word, you know, or don't, you know, we can talk to each other however we want, and the air doesn't care. That is a neutral medium. And so you can't really have net neutrality unless you have a medium where people can be free to speak. And that also means people have to be responsible, you know, so we maybe have to grow up as a civilization,
yeah,
as well.
It'll have its own growing pains and so on.
Oh, absolutely.
But my concern is the power of this type of private communication. They, them, those won't leave us alone. They're going to, yeah, we need to get a throttle on, a handle, a leash, or something. And the one thing that I'm looking for is if I have to, when I was Sunday, Paul Snow has me up there with some attorney. We're opening up Sunday doing yak about. And I'm going, and I give my spiel about the Uber guy and how he's got to pay 20% and he's got 1099. And when they do Lazoos, which was developed at the previous Texas Bitcoin conference, where it's Bitcoin and it's all just no servers on your phone, I go, how the hell are they going to know? Well, he goes, well, let's go to the attorney. I go, I don't care what the attorney says. If I got to care what the attorney says, it's the wrong tech. So I need to know if Made Safe is going to be such that somebody's going to pass a law and it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. What is your opinion?
Well, there's two angles to look at that. I mean, you can look at Bitcoin, basically, it doesn't matter. But people let it matter however they, according to their interests. You know, there's some people that say, well, let's get regulators involved so we know how to get in and out of U.S. dollars. Well, that's understandable, because U.S. dollars belong to them.
Yep, belongs to them. What we're going to do, we got John in the third hour, so that gives us an opportunity. We can just go long until we're done. So I ain't going to worry about it for the archive. You'll get every little old thing. We'll be back in just a little bit with John Ferguson. Yeah, this is, you know, it's thought through way more than I anticipated in it coming out this fast, because he already had hit the ground running. But I know they had they went to a new language because it cut the code from, I don't know, 250,000 down to 50,000 lines or some crap, you know?
Oh, it's so, even better than that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, new code. What is this new code? What is it?
It's a code that's been under development, open source development, by Mozilla Foundation for several years. It's about, I think, tomorrow, it's going to have its 1.0 launch. It's this is like the first stable launch of the code, and it's you know, I actually am trying to set up an interview with some of the Made Safe people that can help walk us through it. But
what's the name of it?
The Rust. It's the language is Rust, and it's extremely developer friendly. It won't miscompile. It was used to compile itself. For whatever those, I don't know that.
Yeah,
how much
no,
those
you confuse me with someone knows.
Remember, I do promote myself as the simpleton of Project Safe, because when we get close to the technicalities of this stuff, I get lost in a hurry. I'm having real trouble with podcast feeds and stuff like that are making me crazy. But yes, the data I have that I believe is straight from David Irvine was. The original C++ code was something on the order of 500,000 or 700,000 lines of code. They did a whole refactoring based upon some discoveries and rework on some of the key philosophy, and they got that C++ code down to, I think, 73,000 lines, which is a huge refactoring. And then David Irvine had been exploring Rust. He said, "This is, you know, he peeled himself and a couple of other developers off and did a pilot to say, well, let's see what this works out as." And so they, in just a couple of weeks, they refactored the whole code from something like 73,000-75,000 lines back down to under 10,000. I think 7,500 lines of code for this incredibly intricate network. That's huge. That like makes it run fast, makes it run lean and smart. It's a huge development. It was a tough decision to make, because, well, we've been working on this all this time, and here we're going to at the last minute change to another code. But otherwise, you run the risk of you put the network out in C++, and somebody says, "Oh, that's really cool. We're going to fork it and do it in Rust because it's going to be so much better." And then, you know, so they just had to make that decision.
Was that David thing? David just said, "Yeah, I'm convinced."
David said, "You know, we got to do it." And he, you know, I'm sure he had to go through some interesting internal things on that.
Yeah, but, no, I remember he did it. Kind of was it November, December? It was in the last year or something. This is an issue, and I'm like, yeah, like I know what you're talking about. So you know,
exactly.
But you know, it's going to push it out for a little. Yeah, whatever. You know, if you think that's the thing to do, then do it. You know, I'm good. Let me go ahead and pick another music. Hold on a second. Did you need me? What I wanted to do is go ahead and we'll go long if you're available. Are you available to talk more? Yeah, and then we'll
absolutely, as long as you want. I would like, before this hour is done, to have just a minute or two to plug what I'm doing.
Yeah, sure. Let's go ahead. Well, let's how will we do it? When I come in, I'll just, you know, do the code thing of interest, you know, kind of give a quick summary of that, and then we'll just put it right back to you, and you can promote whatever you're doing and why and where we're going. But my thing is that the social, political, you know, geopolitical ramifications of this whole thing, you know?
Absolutely. Well, that's part of what I'm...
It's.lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Wow! 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 I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
So good! So good! Yeah, I got it. This is monumental shift and change. There's like before the SAFE network went on and after the SAFE network went on. And you always have fear of some network that's going on by the man that's going to, you know, we rule you in Skynet and we're all dead. But, you know, is there another side of that? Is there like the people network just got turned on and we're allowed and you can't do anything about it and bite me? You know, I vote that one. All right. In the process over the last year and the years that he had been working on this, David came across from C++ coding language to another one called Rust. And it's a long story, and John was telling us about it, and I had talked to Nick about it a little bit, you know, at the end of last year. And what happened was it went from 500 to 700,000 lines of code down to like 73,000, then down to 7,500. I mean, using this new coding language made it much simpler, and they knew that if we don't do this, somebody's going to fork it off and do it anyway. So we need to take the time, you know, whatever weeks, months it takes for us just to do this. And it went a lot easier than they anticipated. So now we have a new lean code that's doing this. And who's covering all this stuff? John Ferguson. And if you're really interested, as we get right towards the end of doing this, you're going to need somebody that's really got their finger on this and talking about it on a regular basis and translating what's going on in the forums to us lay people, because he, you know, markets himself as a simpleton. You know, I'm trying to understand this, and I need guys just like John. John, go ahead and pimp out all the stuff that you're doing.
Well, all right. Yeah, I've been involved pretty much since the crowd sale in trying to understand and work with the SAFE network. And I'm pretty good at getting high level, theory of things. But when it gets anywhere close down to the technical details, I'm lost. So, actually, when I was looking at doing this, I was going to call myself the ninny hammer of the SAFE network, but that's cute. But, it doesn't say it particularly. I really am a simpleton. You get when it comes down to this, but you know, I'm not alone. There are very few people out there that are geeks on the level that can really take this and get down to the bare metal and understand it. But, just like I think yourself, I have tremendous understanding of what this can mean culturally and, technologically in terms of, you know, change, you know, moving towards, decentralization in a real sense. And, you know, in my sense of decentralization is, well, who rules you? Well, if it's anybody other than yourself, it's not really true, because, the truth is that, you know, if you breathe and you are alive, you make choices, and, that's what makes you an individual. That's what makes you a person. And, decentralizing, one's ownership of one's communications and actions is where responsibility comes from, and that is what changes civilization. It doesn't come from the top down, it comes from the inside out.
You know, it's one thing, we see a lot of graphics up here that show a centralized, you know, service where you just got one place and you go and everybody gets from one place. Then you have decentralized, where everybody is their own central whatever, and then distributed. And I got the impression that, you know, to use the terms correctly, they say distributed is distributed from something, like the root system from a tree, like a, you know, a branch, leaf system from a trunk. And even though the avatar trees communicate with each other, they're still, you know, the distributed from a certain tree. And this is more a decentralized thing to where everybody is their own central hub. Can you expand on that a little bit to make that? Because I was using the definitions wrong, I'm sure.
Well, I think you covered it fairly well. Centralized is where it all goes through one channel. Distributed is where, like Google does. I mean, Google as an entity, a fake entity, whatever it is, that under that banner, actually controls all the data, even though it's spread around servers, their servers all over the world, and travel. Completely decentralized is what the SAFE network is, because people will run the software on their computers, and there's no place to go to and say, this is the SAFE network. It is everybody participating together with an agreed upon protocol that actually is autonomous. It is an autonomous network.
Let's walk through what I'm hoping to do, and this is as I'm describing it to people. I want to load files that will stay someplace that I can access. Now, there's two ways to access it. I can, you know, have it cross over from the network into the World Wide Web using a browser service that will feed it from a link of embed code of I pushed a button. Or I can go on the SAFE network itself and go get whatever I want. I was initially anticipating that I would have to be on the SAFE network. Now it looks like they're developing to where they'll cross over and nobody knows the difference.
Well, yes and no. They will not actually directly interface per se. You'll have the World Wide Web won't be able to store data directly on the SAFE network. It has to go through somebody or some mechanism that actually does that. Because they'll be separate networks, but they'll be viewable to each other.
Aha! See, that's my point. See, my thing is, I don't care if the more insulation between the two, the better. As far as I'm concerned, I don't care.
Exactly. Well, but being able to look at one within or in relationship to the other is also a good thing, and that'll be doable.
Okay. Now, this is what I just want people to understand. If I have, and you could look at, I mean, this could be all kinds of stuff. This could be data download of terrorist, bomb, nuclear, child porn, pornography, kind of bad stuff. I mean, get over it. It's already there. My point is that I need to have the World Wide Web embed of a video of Mox News channels. That was one thing I told Michael. Had never done an interview with anybody ever before. We had him on. We put out the word, look, get this guy, man. We can't get hold of him. He came on, and he'd been doing it. He told us his story. I'm like, oh, my goodness. Well, do you have all that data on a hard drive? Yes, I do. Hundreds of gigs. All right, fine. We load that up, and then you put an embed. You embed it on a page on the Freedom's Phoenix on the World Wide Web. Will it play? I'm told yes. And I'm going, okay, we got that going for us. So that, if that feature right there bears out, it's all over. The bad guys are done.
And there's so much more to this. I wanted to go back real quickly and tell you about the Texas Bitcoin Conference. I went there largely to meet and hear Daniel Dabeck talk about SAFEX, the SAFE exchange. And it was quite interesting. I remember you were there and I was there, and I think we both sat, and we were actually a little bit baffled at his talk. I remember I saw you walk out kind of shaking your head, and then you immediately had Daniel on to clarify.
Well, I talked to his investors and some of the gray hair guys that doing their kind of head down, man, what did he say? And I'm
exactly.
going, I go, don't worry about it. I've been through this a gazillion times. We'll have him on the show right away, and I will get a good show for you guys to have something to market. And that's, and it worked out well. So they were
and
happy.
You actually inspired me there. That was a good bit of the inspiration for me to do what I'm doing now, because I took and said, well, that was good. But there's a lot deeper story here. So I took a number of hours and a couple different conversations and actually dug in with Daniel and understood what he was saying, and then put together my own podcast, which took it, I think more all the way. The implications of the SAFE network exchange, of the SAFE exchange protocol that they're working on, is fabulous. It takes what you're talking about in terms of interfacing the World Wide Web with data from the SAFE network and turns it on the subject of not just money, but exchanging any commodities amongst each other on a peer-to-peer
basis. No, it's everything. It's ones and zeros. That's why I keep saying, you guys don't get it, man. It's ones and zero, everything encrypted, distributed, out over, and nobody gets, and kind of you can do it, and no permission slip.
Exactly.
That is huge. So I'm really looking for, there's a lot more in just 1 year that has come and made it much better than I anticipated. When Sean Wilkerson did his, we're just going to go through the break here, so you guys just get over the what we're going to do is continue this conversation. But when storage came out with the ability, like Dropbox, that you can store something and then access it or make it available, for other people, and it not be on a central server, I need video. It was Sean Wilkerson that sent me the HTML5 embed video player, and he goes, "Well, here's how you would do it and embed on." I'm going, "Oh my God, this is OMG, man." I'm going, "This is going to be earth shattering." And I don't know what those are doing to prevent the use of this kind. They have to pass a law or something. Well, that's what we're going to talk about with John, in the post show. So just hold on a second. We'll get right to it.
Excuse me, is this...
Okay, there, now we can just yak. All right. Okay. What is the possibility of them being a law passed? See, when Chuck Schumer came out and goes, Bitcoin bad and Silk Road and Bitcoin, and I'm going, I don't give a crap what he says. They're going to try...
He just promoted it.
Yeah, I was going, well, that thank you. I mean, what they were trying to create what they always do. It's what happened with Microsoft when they were going after them for integrating Explorer with their operating system. You're not allowed to do that. Why? Because we said, okay? Monopoly of you're not allowed. So I think there was a 10-year moratorium on them doing hardware. That's why we didn't have like Surface and all this other stuff for a while. So I'm going, this was a battle that went on in the 90s. In 2001, we had Bob Levy from the Cato Institute came and talked about the Microsoft antitrust lawsuit and explained what was going on. Well, as Hatch out of Utah, as I remember, where Netscape was, the base code for Mozilla and Firefox and everything, they were like, we need the law to prevent them from making it to where we can't make money or something. So I'm doing, wow. Well, when Schumer did this with Bitcoin, he was just trying to, send a warning shot across the bow of we get a cut. You guys want to do this? There better be, somebody on K Street here give us something, which what happened to Microsoft. They didn't have a big, giant lobbying thing. So after all of this stuff, of course, they got a lobbying thing. Well, they want to do it for Bitcoin. Where's our cut? Well, the SAFE network, is there anything for a legislator, a law enforcement, somebody, Interpol, whatever the hell, those from around the planet is going to come out and say, aha, and this is where we're going to get our plug-in of we get our cut or something. Is that happening?
Ernie, I think if that were to be done, it's way too late. Hello?
Yeah, I got you. Go.
Okay. Yeah, if somebody wanted to do that, I think it's way too late for that. This is all out there on GitHub. The only things that aren't out to be grabbed are the final tweaks and so forth. And yeah, there's a lot that could be disrupted. But the other aspect is, I think the people the powers that be are tired of having their own stuff snooped and hacked as well. I think this is such an appropriate move, and I think anybody who looks will see, the legislatures will squawk, but I think the main movers go, well, this is inevitable, let's go with it. I genuinely think that's the case. It's extremely disruptive to central authority, but the internet already as it is getting that way, and it's getting more that way.
Well, they're not going to go quietly into that good night.
Well, of course,
they're going to go after somebody. I mean, it's going to be David.
But I don't think there's really anybody to go after. I mean, yes, if they wanted to kind of squeeze Made Safe per se, but we've already got there's already the code is spread and knowledge of it is spread around the planet already, and the working people into the intricacies of it is an ongoing action by the people at MadeSafe. There are a number of pods in San Francisco and Montreal, and there's interest and activity all over the world to where this is going to be a truly decentralized
warning shots. No references to the SAFE network at all. There's not a politician out there screaming, "Here comes Silk Road 5.7."
Well, I think by the time they were way too late on Bitcoin, and they're going to be even later in relationship to the impact of this. Because until it's actually, we're going to some degree on faith. Honestly, I'm a simpleton. I don't really know firsthand that this is going to work. I happened to be a reasonable judge of character and technically not completely in the dark, so I can dig in and listen to David Irvine and ask questions and back and forth, and I've done that a fair bit personally with him on the forum as well, and as a group activity trying to hash these things out, and I believe it. That's really all I can do.
Yeah, my investment is
choose to go, wow,
is in a concept. It's not the deep, it's the current. You're confusing somebody who gives a crap. I'm looking at the aspect of the peer to peer dissemination of information that can't be stopped.
That's the concept that we're looking at, and that we really go, wow, that's going to change. That would change everything. As far as the SAFE network, I believe it's going to provide a key aspect of that has never existed before. And you add on that the ability to exchange value around the amongst people, known or unknown, and you have a complete shift in how commerce and social interaction is going to take place.
Well, the
period.
Yeah, no, I mean, and everything, it changes everything. I mean, all of a sudden, all the value that Facebook gets out of all the favorite colors of we know our, cousins, former roommates of the person or whatever, and their favorite movies and phrase in a book and all. I warned my kids, I'm going, when they started MySpace, I'm going, look, you guys understand what's going on here, right? I just want to make sure you guys know what's going on. And they're pretty savvy. They're pretty cool about it. They're not too stupid, but there's way too much information that they have on us and way too little we have about our own government that wants to rule us. And I'm going, this has to flip. And with this technology, it at least gives us the ability to keep ourselves private if we want, publish publicly what we want, and anyone have access to it forever. This is major, major game change. But they, those are not going to be, happy about it. So that's why I wasn't just on MadeSafe as much. I'm also on the actual ones and zeros are passing over what line. So that's where, CubeSats came in, and OuterNet, and
and software defined radio has tremendous applications. This is people will start to be able to put up pretty long range data connections that can link together very easily. This stuff is coming. There's tremendous amount of data. These are things that people discuss on the SAFE Network forum that I was really enlightened. The software-defined radio is a great future. There's all sorts of interconnections.
Well,
define
that. I remember when they did in the mid '90s when they started going. See, first it was bulletin boards. You would upload, and that's kind of what I equated MadeSafe with. It used to be that you had your own server on your desk. You'd put stuff up, and whoever dialed into it got access, and you'd have different nets where people would upload their email, download their email, and it'd go through all these computers that were connected. It was kind of a MadeSafe thing. And I'm going, okay, as that got faster and more online and more stuff was put on, I just knew the net was going to get faster and better. And then they went World Wide Web method, and I'm going, yeah, this is centralizing too much. It was convenient, and they had the power, and that's what they did. But we missed the opportunity to go the way that it normally would have gone if we just left it alone. It'd be more like the MadeSafe network. So I'm looking at that, and I'm like, what was going on before that's not going on now? Well, before, it was a lot more open exchange. I mean, it was before the trolls all hit. And a lot of these trolls and spamming and everything, they usually came from, you know, people you could easily, you know, spam arrest them out of, they're not in the community, we don't like them anymore thing, if you had control of it, you know? So I'm looking at what kind of different, in the forum, what are the things that they're talking about using it for? Because I believed it was kind of evolving towards this in the beginning, and it got sidetracked with the World Wide Web.
Maybe. I'm not. I think that the web evolved the way it did for a number of reasons. A lot of it has to do with technology, the technological capabilities that came along, and of course that's influences which what were developed based upon our corporate and cultural and economic paradigms. You know, we're used to, well, let's see, we need to communicate. Well, let's talk to the big corporations and government. That's what we think. But we're having done that, we're connecting individual to individual more and more, regardless of the fact that it's by way of fairly centralized chunks. We go, well, there's real people all over the world, and we can talk together. And then the SAFE network, the beauty of the way the SAFE network is put together is it can actually decentralize the connections without having to immediately decentralize. It can decentralize the connections between people without immediately having to decentralize the technology that hooks them together. In other words, we can talk to people all over the world without anybody being in the middle while still using those same snooped lines that are completely compromised.
Yeah, see, this is it. No, I understand that. I mean, you know, this is the one thing, but they will go, you're not allowed because you're not allowed and you didn't have a Bitcoin encrypted license pass of ones and zeros and you're not allowed.
Then that shuts everything down and makes it all, I mean, that makes commerce impossible if they try and enforce that because encrypted.
And they care because why?
Well, because their fortunes rest upon the internet as well. The banks and Wall Street and everybody else is communicating cryptographically over those same lines.
No, you're killing me. I mean, this is, you know, made safe is, you're saying exactly the same thing for me to be able to put something up, for me to serve it. There's an exchange of some kind of something. Well, they're going to do the same thing. Oh, yeah? Well, we're going to do it too.
That's fine. I don't care.
Okay, I just want to make sure that, you know, to think that, well, they could never and they wouldn't. Bullshit. I mean, you know, if it benefits they, them, those in some way, and because they can,
well,
the likelihood
is they will just use the SAFE network. But I don't. They can't stop. My point is they can't stop what MadeSafe is doing because it's basically indistinguishable as traffic from banking and finance information that travels around the net anyway.
No, I understand this. It's ones and zeros. It's encrypted. They don't know, but that's where this kind of, you know, bit license thing comes in. They're going.
Yeah, but the bit license only occurs at the point where that stuff gets when you interface with their money mostly. And of course, hey, look, a bully can be a bully anywhere they want, but
yeah,
saying
at the point of ISPs, Verizon, Google,
that's like saying,
Yahoo, AT&T.
But Ernie, that's like saying thou shalt not pirate Game of Thrones. I'm sorry. Nobody listens because it's too easy. It's too, you know, it's like, I'm sorry, the technology is there where, you know, people are going to communicate. And the model is, hey, well, don't make it so damned impossible to get it where you get your cut. Just take a reasonable cut and make it easy and people will be happy to pay. I don't want to, you know, I want to reward the artists. I'm not all that interested in all the guys who are raping the artists, too.
Well, this is where, you know, watch my bit kind of comes in. You know,
exactly.
I go flip, it disperses it out to all the band members, including the drummer. You know, I mean, you know, whatever.
But absolutely. See, and that's all possible on the SAFE network as well.
Well, no, I know it. This is my point, is that, you know, they're going, well, it's just ones and zeros, and they're never going to see it over the Cox line of the whatever. And it's going to get to where it's a white coin, black coin. We need to have, is it approved data? They're not going to say, we can't tell what the data is, therefore it's not approved. You know,
well, maybe that's there's some possibility of that.
There's every possibility of that.
That's the, well,
so,
yeah,
but this is my point, John. The next level is I'm going, so then we need to bypass their forms of communication. It's Department of Defense Internet. What the hell did you think was going to happen? So okay. I'm going, all right, so we have the mesh. And I remember in the 90s, they were doing packet radio. So you have ham radios that were transmitting text messages, and that was 20 years ago. So now I'm going, they have to have improved on this technology. In fact, I know they have. I've talked to people. You can email using ham radio signals, right?
Right. Well, there's many. Yeah, and this goes into areas I've kind of scanned, but I couldn't talk about with any authority or even enlightening data, other than the fact that these technologies are opening up and they're becoming more and more into the hands or at least closer to the hands where individuals can go, oh, I think I'm going to set up a little tower and broadcast to a several square mile area that's going to hook up with other people doing the same thing because it's economical and just because it's neat and I want to do it. And plus I'll get paid in SafeCoin or Bitcoin or storage coin or whatever. I'll get rewarded for doing it. And see, that's part of the beauty of the cryptographic currency model, is that it incentivizes people to participate and pays their way. And yes, that's all going to be, it's ePlug. It'd be worth looking up. It's basically a little device that's a little computer that you plug into your wall, and it passes your Wi-Fi signals around and talks to other people and exchanges micropayments of Bitcoin or SafeCoin or whatever you want to put into it, and then it'll talk to the neighborhood and it'll spread from there. There's a lot to be done there, and there's a lot of people working on it.
Well, they've been working
on... That's just the next level. We can't go right for infrastructure, because infrastructure, I mean, not immediately, but the Safe Network, and not just the Safe Network. Safe Network is part of a bigger picture that's all working towards decentralizations, because culturally people are recognizing, more and more, like, oh, well, the centralized thing, it doesn't work. It just leaves a place for the crooks to hijack, you know.
So no, I'm hip. You know, I'm on board with this, and I'm just wondering but I don't want people to be lulled into a sense of we don't have to do the UHF broadcasting of the mesh network of mycelium's effort to make the internet irrelevant. You know, it's kind of like Fire Chat and Open Garden, and you know, all this stuff is coming already. And
absolutely.
So, and even with just the CubeSats, to be able, you're not allowed to have a dish. You're not allowed to transmit. You're not allowed to. Because they'll keep screaming and stomping their feet and pounding their fist on the table, saying that you're not allowed because it's not approved speech. And this is, you know, you're going to get in your free speech zone, and it's called a Cox account, and you're not allowed to do it any other way. So I'm just going to think that they wouldn't do that. They can't. I go, BS. They always do that. You know?
They try. They try. And in specific cases like North Korea, you know, you can do a lot. But it's going to be really hard. It's just like... It's going to be really hard with 300 million guns sitting around for people to come knocking on doors saying, you know, you got to turn off
your... They just got to fear. They just got to get the right people afraid. So in the forums...
Oh, well, there's truth to that.
But in the forums, what are they saying? Screw them. We don't care. Wait for the machine guns? I mean, what's their response to this going on?
Well, the idea is, it's coming forward as it's coming forward. We just continue to work to make it irrelevant. You know, you have the same attitude. Fighting this stuff is sometimes it's good to make a point, but fighting it head on is useless, because really the only problem with it is that it's relevant. Well, let's make them irrelevant.
Exactly.
They're fighting for relevance. Well, let's bypass all that and just yawn. In the meantime, no fear, like you say.
Well, this is my new word picture. You know, I'm kind of, like government's becoming, you're driving down the lone highway on the lone desert highway, and in your rearview mirror, you see the sun setting. And as the road stretches over the horizon, you see the government car. You know, government's got their little bug out there. You know, they're trotting along, and they're kind of getting further and further behind us. And sooner or later, they just start to slip over the horizon, and then you forget they were ever there. You know, you just make them irrelevant. And that's what's happening. It's just getting to where all their systems, all of their, the only thing that they offer is fear. They go, look at, be afraid, and if we have to, we'll throw a couple of mushroom clouds in there just to say, well, see, we got something to be afraid of, and we're the saviors, and why they need us. And I'm going, okay. So Safe Network, the very concept of this and a bunch of other stuff in the space, when I went to Anarchapoca, my whole presentation was on, you know, the advancements in space that's just going to bypass a lot of this stuff. And where's my freaking flying car? So I'm going, this is going to have much greater impact on the world than I think people realize. But I'm wondering how much the people that we're going up against, the governments and institutions and surveillance and intelligence community and military and all that, I'm wondering if the Safe Network is even on their radar screen.
You know, I don't know, and honestly, it's not something I can have any influence on one way or the other. So I just don't pay attention, because that just creates fear. It's like, well, I don't know, I don't see how, but you know, if something comes up, we'll deal with it. Short of, you know, I mean, like you say, you know, a couple of mushroom clouds will change all the atmosphere, and I don't put it past them. But then again, you know, they're
more need reason lot, for safe.
They've got a lot to, yeah, well, exactly, and they've got a lot to lose in doing that, in taking that kind of action. Their grip is already slipping, and you know, we'll see.
Well, tell me more about the forums. The people are discussing this. They're of what, you know, philosophical mindset.
It's various. You have, I mean, first of all, the network truly is designed and about privacy, security, and freedom. That's right up front from the very get-go in Made Safe's promotion. And I carry that forward and say this is all about privacy, security, and freedom. Now, if you start with that as a concept, the people who are really into it aren't just technical geeks that go, oh, yeah, well, this is a neat thing, you know. Hey, you know, they'll have various opinions about, well, we need a decentralized democracy. And boy, that gets some real interesting discussions going, because some people are, well, democracy, that's... Anyway, you know the kind of arguments that can go on about that.
We're worried about who's going to be first lady if Clinton, you know, Hillary wins, and they're talking about Chelsea being first lady. So I'm going,
exactly.
Yay, we got that going for us. So, like, whoopee. I care.
Well, exactly. And most the forum brings a lot of different opinions together, but they're all bound together by the idea of privacy, security, and freedom, and secure access for everyone, which is what SAFE stands for. So that puts the group in a pretty amenable frame of mind. People will have their back and forths, but people have their characters, and some you like some better than others, just depending upon your inclination and bent. But the kinds of things that are discussed are not just political at all. They're a lot technical, a lot social, a lot, how are we going to, you know, how is this going to be done? It's just continuing to chew and work on the whole project.
But what is the response to people that are, you know, very illegal, very immoral, you know, skip the kitty porn. It's always going to come down to that, or
that's discussed.
Throwing kittens on cactuses or something. I mean, you know.
That's discussed in terms of, well, how do we deal with that? Because that is a potential public relations situation. And how do we deal with that? What applications do we put in, and how do we approach it from a communication standpoint?
Well, can you? I mean, that's the point. I mean,
hey, this is not a top-down solution, so it's everybody working on it, and there's things you can do that you can't shut everything off. But the idea is to say, yeah, well, here's a filter. You want to be really careful how you know what you see. You can access it via, you can have mediated content if you want. There's nothing. Look, there's no reason why Facebook, exactly as it exists now, with all of its unprivate downsides and everything, there's no reason why that can't exist on the Safe Network. It's just easy to do it differently.
No, I understand.
People are going to make those choices. The idea is continually to put choice in the hands of the end user. What do you want? Do you want privacy or not? You can have either way easily. Right now, it's impossible to easily have privacy, security, and freedom on the internet. You have a lot of freedom, but you got to look over your shoulder.
This is why I really enjoy Cody Wilson's approach. When they did 3D printing, you know what the real problem is. They're going to go, wow, desktop manufacturer. I just got my Ghost Gunner Friday, okay, the mill. And and I got everybody and their grandma over here wanting, like, hey, what's the legal thing here? I mean, you know, how many of us go to jail if you touch it? You know, that kind of deal. So I'm going, all right, with 3D printing, he goes, I know where this is going. It's desktop manufacturing. Anybody can make their own little widget of their General Motors of the louver knob of I fix my Kenmore washer, and there's nothing they can do, and I did it, you know? So who's right. going to complain? All these manufacturers, they make a bunch of money on the parts. You know, hell, the profit's not even selling the damn car. It's all the other crap, you know? So I'm going, all right, if you have manufacturing going down to 12-year-olds being able to make whatever they want, improve on whatever they got, and that has an impact on the ecostructure for a lot of people. So they're going to go, nope, don't like that. Well, what are they going to use? Well, you could make a gun. So Cody starts right up. Yep, absolutely. I can make a gun. Made a gun. Now what are you going to do? So now he's in a lawsuit with the State Department because of all their crap. Then you do the Ghost Gunner, which is a desktop mill. But you could make a gun. Yep, we're going to start right off with a gun. Okay, we're going to make the gun.
Let's get that out of the way.
So the thing is with the SAFE network, it's almost like you got to go the same way. You know, I mean, I don't think we have, IED production line schematic.com on the SAFE network, you know, or something like that. And of course, they'll bring up kiddie porn and whatever sex trafficking, and you find out it's all government agents doing it anyway. But the point, or Catholic Church. So I'm just going, look, the people are not as depraved as all these people that want to try and control the people, you know?
Exactly.
So, but that argument needs to be made right off the bat, because I guarantee it's going to come up. And I'm going, look, it's a Cody Wilson playbook. It's like, yes, you can do anything, including getting gun schematics and downloading, you know, software of whatever and kiddie porn. Because if you don't, they're going to use that against this entire thing, and something must be done. We got to make it illegal and kill somebody for even turning it on, and you used our antenna and cocks and you weren't allowed because you didn't have that permission slip for sending ones and zeros. That's where they're going to go.
Well, exactly. And I make that point in an article that's on safecrossroads.net that I mentioned at the net neutrality and the SAFE network. Of course, you know, when you have a neutral medium, you know, the air can't tell you not to curse. You curse, it doesn't really care. It will transmit the message. You can talk sweetly. It'll transmit the message just as easily. You can't stop bad guys from breathing. You know, it's like, grow up. We're on a playing field here that's truly even and equal.
Yep, it's us that has to change. We got to have this open discussion now. Because if we don't, because I give you 15 gazillion examples of how all the stuff they say they're protecting us from is that the very worst and baddest guys are them. You know? So
well,
I'm going,
of course. Yeah.
So this is, it's going to come up. And I guarantee, and it's going to be a social thing, just like what you're saying. But it's at a really good time with the revelations by Snowden and what
exactly.
The governments are doing and everything. You're going, look, man, you know, whatever, the bad and evil that's out there is not, you know, they're having you look in the wrong place and distraction made you look. You know, this is, it's about freedom of ones and zeros. What you do with them, that is your thing. But we need to have some kind of a camp. And I'm just wondering if in the forums this kind of discussion is going on. And
well, absolutely.
But what's their activism? What are they going to do?
Well, you know, it's like, Ernie, how many cats you got lined up in your army? You know, I'm doing my part.
Yeah, no, I'm just wondering what they...
And we talk about it. There is no central solution. It is like, hey, those are things to be considered. And as they come up, we'll see. That, you know, I'm doing my part talking about privacy, security, and freedom. And also part of that is people got to be responsible for their own experience of life, you know. And that's really where civilization goes forward, is when individuals go, oh, I'm me. I better be responsible for my cut of existence, and I don't have to always have a nanny to make sure that I do the right thing.
Okay, let me give you a perfect example. I was talking to Tom Vesa about this yesterday. He's in Hong Kong doing his Bitcoin thing. And I'm going, okay, you know, I remember this kind of conversation you and I are having right now was the conversation between John Oliver and Edward Snowden in Moscow. So they're sitting there, and Snowden's going on, well, it's just going to this and saying the same things that you're saying. He goes, yeah, and nobody cares, and here's clips of people nobody knows, and they don't care. But what did they care about? Dick pics. Oh, should they be able to log and, you know, look and send around and the NSA know about your dick pics? No, that would be, oh, heavens to Murgatroyd. This is where the battle is going to be. It's going to be mom and dad and sitting around with their kids, and they're going to have to retrain them and take responsibility as a family and do, you know, a culture as we grow up to be adults and we, you know any and everything's out there already anyway. If the 14-year-old wanted to find it, they'd find it. But the point...
That point can be made, too. Yeah.
Well, it's going to be made. I guarantee it. And I'm wondering, it's going to, right when it's at the super time, it's the Super Bowl time, when it's the most opportune time, it's going to, when they, them, those come after what Made Safe is about, they're going to come with, you know, all shotguns a-blazing, and it's going to be a PR campaign. And the only option that we have is just, it's ones and zeros, what you do with it, peace, freedom, get over it, and grow up. So I'm like...
Ernie, we have a pretty recent example to kind of gauge this by. It's too early to attack it because it's theoretical. All attacking it now will do is drive interest, which will make the launch of it even more high impact. I just had a pop. You still there?
Yeah. No. I'm worried that they're going to have their own site. They're going to have Kitty, you pornhub dot safe, you know, run by the DEA. I mean, you know, they're sitting there waiting.
Will. But let me tell you, you know, we've got Bitcoin is a great example because it was just nerd money. And then it started to matter. And then it was the Silk Road and this, that and the other. And oh, my goodness. And now what have we got? Just a few years later, we have billions of dollars flowing into the ecosystem to build it out. The SAFE network is such a revolutionary technology that I think it's going to make Bitcoin look like nothing.
I'm with you.
It doesn't matter. Every new technology goes through that curve of, well, oh, this is handy. Who's going to use it? Well, it's illegal. The criminals are going to use it. Okay, fine. But alcohol was illegal. Okay, criminals did it. Well, but everybody wanted it. Everybody wants privacy, security, and freedom, and they want something more efficient. They want to be able to earn money or earn some resource for their access to things and find equitable exchanges, because that's human nature, really. You know, they make the powers that be, you know, people that really want to get over on people promote how everybody really wants to get over on everybody, when that's not really the case. The bulk of people want, the only people who really want power, who want to get undue control over people, are the people that really, you know, need it.
Got a shiny badge. Well, we have that perfect example with Mt. Gox. Somebody I was talking to yesterday, it might have been Tone said something. He goes, or somebody I was talking, I can't remember. But they were going, you know, think about it. You had Ross Ulbricht getting nailed for Silk Road. It goes through all this stuff that happened with Mt. Gox. You had the DEA and all these different agents are getting nailed for embezzling a bunch of the Bitcoin. They got tracked down and, you know, and found out, and they were doing. And they go, you know, I think it was the DEA or some government agency that stole all the Mt. Gox coin. And I'm going, that wouldn't surprise me. They said, and it's ours now, you know. So I'm just, there's so many opportunities for in a new space like this to have bad PR. Now, fortunately, there were enough people that understood what was going on, and it wasn't a failure of Bitcoin. It was a failure of the people and how they used it. So that can be translated into the SAFE network also. Hey, man, it's just a protocol. You know, it's not that we need. Yeah, but see, we need to have this argument. This battle is what I do. This is politics. It's social, you know, interaction. communication. It is PR. It is why I've been doing this for 25 years. And I'm telling you, there is going to be some government agency that already sitting out there ready to give it a black eye. And sure. when they can, you know, either it's going to give it more marketing, it's going to provide it, or it's going to give an opportunity to find more solutions. But they're not going to sit quietly on their hands and just let this happen. I guarantee that.
Well, good for them. Let them do it. Bring it on. Hey, this is, you know, this is what we're looking at. I'm not looking to restrain other people. I'm looking to empower people. And I think if the SAFE Network will empower people on an individual basis that's what the internet has been doing. That is what we find attractive about it. It's been empowering individuals to communicate and to do commerce and to interact and share philosophies and ideas and learn things. It's tremendously empowering to individuals.
The yeah, you got to give them examples.
The SAFE Network, look, we don't have to tell them how to use it. We just need to make it available for them to use.
Oh, I'm going to use it right off the bat as an example. Luke Radowski's stuff goes up. Mox News' stuff goes up. Anti-War's stuff goes up. Freedom's Phoenix's stuff goes up. We have access to any and everything, and boom, and this is why, done. But it's an activist thing. You see my point?
Of course, you're going to set that example, and that's great.
Yes!
That's what I'm doing. I'm using my whatever PR platform that I create, doing what I'm doing.
No, I'm glad you're there.
It's there to promote privacy, security, and freedom, and responsibility for everybody. Hey, you know, let's get on with it. We can make things better, but we've all got to make it better. And the technology won't do it, but the technology will level the playing field to where we don't have the deck stacked so much against us. The internet has had a double-edged sword. It's opened us up to a lot of decentralizing characteristics, but the technology as it's formed has also clamped down and made predictive programming and psychological influences much easier to do.
I think the balance
is really close to tipping towards the individualization, and a lot of that is generational. You and me are baby boomers. We're, you know, when we die off, I'll tell you, the kids have already got it.
You know, the one thing that I want to demonstrate, I mean, it's a thought experiment, not that I spend the effort. Oh, I could probably do it. It'd be fun. I'm going, you know, how come there's no catapult website? I mean, you know, just catapulting cats, man. I mean, that'd be the most popular site, you know, in the cactuses. I mean, you know, it's kind of, we got some saguaro and we got this little baby kitten and we're going to do, you know, I saw something they had. It was called Stomp TV or Crush or something like that. And I guess it's, you know, women in high heel, knee high leather boots stomping on bunny rabbits and stuff. I mean, I didn't even go any further in the headline, but it's called, it's called Crush Porn. That's what it is. So it's little bunny rabbits and kittens and whatever. So I'm just going, yeah. So on the SAFE Network, we got the channel Cat Appult.
Sure, well, you can have that. But, you know, the thing about...
Well, you know the internet would go batshit. You know, the internet is cats, man. So it's just, you know, if there could be something or a PR, it's almost like you want to do it, be make it fake, you know, because you don't do cats.
But then all you have to do is use the SAFE Network to promote where it's available on the, on the internet. Say, look, it's not... Look, the SAFE Network is really cool because this stuff is not shoved on you. You have a lot, individuals have choices as to where they look. You get onto Google and they start shoving stuff at you. You know, there's so much advertising, there's so much this, that, and the other pushed, which is beyond your range of choice. Now, some people want that. Hey, I want you to analyze what I'm doing so you can serve up more of what I want. Great. But you get to, you know, that's fine. You can do that on the SAFE Network, but you also say, and I really am not interested in this other junk. Think of StumbleUpon. Are you familiar with StumbleUpon?
Yeah.
StumbleUpon's great. You lay out your preferences. You up and down vote things that come at you. I've found some wonderful stuff that I never would have found otherwise. That is a model that the SAFE Network can really operate with.
Is there search engines or this kind of thing being developed for SAFE?
All of these things are possible. I don't know exactly what level of fleshing out. We got to get the underlying technology right. This is the thing. I don't know if you know. I interviewed Dan. I did mention I interviewed Daniel Daybeck at length, and really between your interview and mine, we've got a real different picture of what's in it, you know, where we're at. You know, the SAFE network can do really wonderful things in terms of sending SafeCoin around and so forth. But hey, exchanges and other platforms to be built on the top that will enable us to do more and more things, those things are going to be built out. And they're going to be built out really quickly when this gets going. Because I can tell you the amount of technical expertise that's going to flow into the network when it's live and proven out is going to be something remarkable to see. What we've got right now is, we don't really know it's worked. So it's just like people like me who are, I'm an evangelist because I see the vision. I might be completely wrong. I might really have it underestimated, but I don't think so. I've done my homework. And so right now, we're operating a certain amount on belief in the people, belief in what we see, belief in our ability to estimate, what is, you know, what's being told to us as opposed to being able to do it. But, and so a lot of people are not commenting. You know, I listen to the Let's Talk Bitcoin network fairly religiously, and I'm really anxious to know what Andreas Antonopoulos has to say about this, but I doubt seriously he's going to comment on it until it's in action.
He's kind of dropped off our radar because, you know, it's, we've been really critical. I've had Andreas on for hours, and
sure,
my whole thing has been, if they can, they are. I mean, it's everything that I've been screaming about from the beginning. I'm like, okay, so it's anonymous. Tell me about the anonymity. Well, it's anonymous. Well, it's kind of pseudo-anonymous, which means not. And then it kind of, well, okay, it's not anonymous at all. And then it goes through all these different phases. With Andreas, I'm going, look, man, I need to know, can they, them, those control and do and this, and how would they do that? And then all of a sudden, Gavin goes to the MIT group of, now it's right back into the government hands, and we're paying the developers to what I'm going, oh, yay, I feel so much better about it now. And then, of
course.
You know, Wall Street puts in hundreds of millions of dollars, and they're going to, it's the man. Might as well just be, you know, digital cashless society kind of, and they know. Now, is there...
Well, Aaron, yeah, I'd caution you not to fall into your own trap of that you warn against of Bitcoin has its place, and no, it's not the ultimate solution, and the SAFE network isn't the ultimate solution either, but it's all moving in the right direction. Bitcoin has some imperfections that they may get overcome and they may not. It may be a solution or not, but it's let Pandora out of the box.
It's,
you know, it's
opened
Pandora. It's another couple of degrees of opening of that Pandora's box. I think the SAFE network is going to flip the lid open. And we'll see what happens with Bitcoin. I'm glad for Bitcoin. I follow it. It's drawing tremendous amounts of resources and thinking people. Some who I agree with, some who I don't.
No, I'll tell you, when I bought a chunk of...
But the technology itself is going in the right direction.
I tell you, when I bought Bitcoin to store, put in cold storage, and did my in safe kind of distributed whatever. And I go, when the government is all in, man, I said, after I went to Consumer Electronics Show in January, I could see what was happening. Wall Street's coming. I'm going, yeah, you know what? It's time to buy some Bitcoin. Why? Because it's going to be the man's coin. You know, I can see it coming. You know, so I'm just going to, why? You invest? You know, is it really free? I go, no. Yeah, I'm just, you know, diversifying a little bit, going into that, because I can see it's going to succeed. It's not going to go away. It's going to continue to keep getting developed on. It's going to continue to advance. It's going to continue. And all I got to do is sit there and think, okay, so if and when I do cash in some way traditionally, you know, how much percentage do I got to do over to pay the capital gains and whatever extra tax they put on and blah, blah, blah. Here we freaking go again. But I'll go ahead and do that. Just say I did. So I get some. Sit
sure.
There. Just wait. SAFE,
well, it's not,
I'm looking
it's
at
not
a totally
ultimate...
different mindset. SAFE but... is a mindset, a goal, a method of a philosophy. I'm investing in the philosophy. And just like with Bitcoin, I've been following it from the freaking beginning. When they did the rise and rise of Bitcoin, as they're doing stuff, I'm on the other side of the phone with them. I'm interviewing them during this time. I'm talking to these guys. And I was asking the very questions that are coming out now. And they were kind of vague about it. And they're there a little bit more, and I keep drilling, and then it happened. So with Safe, I see the promise of what is being done. I'm very, and you heard my initial interviews and everything. I understood exactly why this is so important. Where's the chink in the armor?
Well, you know, I don't know, and we'll just have to see.
I'm excited.
Yeah, believe me. And that is one thing you got to say about the forums is there are chink pursuers continually. We, you know, I've been one myself. Like, oh, we've got to have this and that, and you know, we hash it out, and it actually has resulted in some code changes and some philosophy changes.
Well, you got some examples for me? Got to give me an idea.
Let's see. Oh, well, there's access. You know, David Irvine had talked about everybody being able to have free access to store data on the network and this, that, and the other. That's a great ideal, but it actually, when we started hashing it around and looking it over, we saw, well, you know, that actually opens up a tremendous attack vector of people being able to go, okay, well, then I'm going to store the encyclopedia of nonsense on the network 50 million times. You can only store so much for an account. All right, I'll have a bot open up a million accounts, and we'll just overwhelm the network with trash. You know, that's a good point. And we hashed that out amongst everybody, and David Irvine was in. We looked at it, and I mean, I don't know all of the different input, but then it came up, well, you know, we can have people access any data free, but then have to, in order to store data to the network, they've got to buy some kind of, use SafeCoin to buy a volume of storage potential for the network. And the mechanisms to work that out and how to is a really good solution, basically. It means, oh, okay, well, if you want to contribute stuff that's going to be on the network, you need to contribute something to the network. You contribute by running your computer with the software for a while. You're going to earn enough SafeCoin to do that just fine. But you're proving a resource. You're
well, I can use resource. My own computer to load it up. See, that's another thing. If I take 300 gigs of information onto my terabyte hard drive, it's not going to just have 300 gig on there. It kind of disperses it somehow. Or can I start it off as 300 gig on my node and then it starts replicating it? I mean, how does that work?
Well, you got to remember that the network, the data on the network, the way it's broken down into chunks and hashed and encrypted, it's stored. Oh, boy, that gets into a technical thing. But it's basically going to be distributed fairly evenly all around the network because you have a random node. You know, you start up the software on your computer, you're going to have a network address, which is random. And the data in the little chunks that are going to be stored, they're going to be random as well. So as data is stored to the network, it's going to be fairly evenly distributed around the entire network. Now, the difference is whether you're providing, you know, 10 gigabytes to store or a terabyte. It'll take you a long time to get that terabyte filled up, whereas the 10 gigabytes will get filled up pretty quickly. You see what I'm saying?
On your machine.
Well, yeah. I mean, the resource that you set aside for your vault. You say, well, I can only spare 10 gigabytes. Well, that's going to get filled up fairly quickly, depending upon the amount of data on the network. It might get, if the network gets seasoned, it might fill up real quick, that 10 gigabytes. But you'll have data there that occasionally somebody's going to want a chunk of that, and when you provide it, you'll have an opportunity to earn SafeCoin.
Well, how does it look on my computer? I mean,
I don't know. That's an interface angle that I don't worry too much about.
It says safe network cordoned off.
It'll just be a bunch of it'll just be a section with a bunch of files in it that are meaningless to you.
So if they open my door, grab my hard drive, and take that down, and they're just getting gobbledygook.
They're getting gobbledygook and little pieces of gobbledygook out of that are indecipherable. Without the whole thing being put together, we didn't get
half a percent of a file,
right?
Encrypted.
One thing I'd like to say, I'd hope to say just a little bit more on the air, but I do want to say that Part of what I'm really trying to do is to make this accessible to everybody and to put everybody on the same page, whether they be a geek or a simpleton like myself or even more so. And so that's part of the reason why my first podcast is an introduction. What is a safe network anyway? It's only about 30 minutes. And it lays out some of this data in a comprehensible way for most anybody, and also lays out some recommendations for how to proceed to get your own understanding from wherever you're at. But that then will put people on a better framework to be able to communicate about the network.
Well, maybe you want to help with us, because I mean we're going to do three machines with two computer geeks and the non-geek doing it right freaking not
well,
later.
I'm not sure that I'm qualified to get at that level. But what I am looking at, as soon as is appropriate, I will be having a show on that exact subject. Might even do a video, we'll see. When it comes down to ready to install Vault software, that stuff is going to be available. I'll feature it on my site. It'll be something that I'll be happy, who knows where, that stuff coming up. As far as exactly what to do and how to set it up, that's not in my ballywick at
the
moment.
Well, fortunately, Daniel says that it's a Linux-based closed box plug-in power Ethernet dump.
Well, the systems that they were selling now, actually, that's shifted. You'll probably get the benefit of that. He promised you some nodes. They're not going to be selling those anymore due to some certain complications. The Infinity Algorithms has gone to being completely a software company. So if you get that, that's great. I want one too.
Why aren't they pursuing the hardware?
Daniel told me some of the details when I was talking to him about it, and I don't, it just has to do with, licensing of something or other. I honestly don't remember. It has to do with the hardware and how it's used, and it was just too complicated.
Government.
And they said, I don't know. I'm not commenting on that end of it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that I know that from talking with them, they're now strictly a software company in terms of what's being promoted.
What's been
promised to you, I can't comment on.
Well, over the last year, we've had. Well, he just communicated via email today, so I guess it's still on. But for the last year, I've had my IT guys. I go, look, I need to, we're doing a lot of the back end on Freedom's Phoenix, get it all streamlined and ready, and how we, because I don't want to have to load up a story a second time. If I have Freedom's Phoenix duplicated, I need the back end duplicated also, that the files are updated through the interface, that when we load stuff on the web here, that feed goes up and then does the same thing on the safe network.
Right,
and I'm going,
right.
So that's what we've been working on. So now when I don't have to enter it twice, so I just, I need to be able to enter it once and it propagate, is mirrored on the safe network.
Sure,
so
sure.
That's what we've been working on. And they were
good.
Going on the forums, and they just weren't ready enough. And they're changing. It's not ready. So they kind of held it off for a while. Well, then they talked to Daniel, and he's got them like up to date and up to speed on what they're doing now. But it seems like they're still a little ways. I mean, they're always been close, and they can get something going. But when we load it up, we're going to be ready to hit it running.
Absolutely. I feel the same way. I want to be the first podcast news site on the Safe Network Live. You're a news site too, but anyway, as far as it's specifically dedicated to the Safe Network, I really want that too. And honestly, I'm going to need help because, I really am a simpleton. I don't know. I'm confused.
Well, the other thing that we need is to have the promotion of it. If the open source Chrome browser is able to go between World Wide Web and the Safe Network using the same browser, that's huge. And I know Mozilla is doing the same thing.
Absolutely.
It's
going to be the things coming forward are really amazing, and I don't want to talk about all the different things that are shifting, but there's some really. It's just getting slicker and slicker as it goes. And I know that we don't know everything out here on the edges, the guys right at Core. are doing some amazing things, and we get informed and we get to talk about some of those things, and it's like, oh wow, but we also don't want to distract them with, oh, I'll break it down for us right now. No, get it done and then we can break it down. Because we trust you, basically. And where there's questions of, well, which way should we go? It really does go to the community. That's one thing. Anybody who's interested, listen to my podcast, follow along, get yourself up to speed. And part of my recommendations is when and where and how to get involved in the community. Because Made Safe listens to the community. It's fully interactive with, hey, you know, we're trying to figure out which to do. And it gets discussed.
Well, that's one thing that, David, I wanted to, who is going to be, and is there going to be a central point of failure? Is there going to be a foundation? Is there going to be like Mozilla kind of thing? Is there? Yeah, for a while. We need to continue development, just kind of like Bitcoin Core developer kind of thing. But at some point, it's free. It's done.
Well, I have certain questions along that line, and believe me, I'm champing at the bit to, at some point, have an in-depth conversation with David Irvine myself, because I've got plenty of questions that are just not appropriate to dig into at this time. He's got his head down. To his credit, whatever head down he does, he also stays in touch with what's going on the Safe Network forum. And I'll plug that again. It's forum.safenetwork.io. And he comments, gives his likes. I always, when I've said something wise and he's the first one to give a thumbs up on it, I go, yeah, it feels good.
So how many people participate in the forum?
I don't know. There's hundreds registered. There are probably 50 or 60 that are real regular posters. And who knows how many are lurking. There's a lot. There are a lot of lurkers.
Yeah, dot mills.
And they surface every now and then with a question, and which is great. It's whatever level of participation people want to put into it.
Well, my IT guys were just saying it wasn't mature enough even 6 months ago. They're going, it's just not ready.
And they were right. It's just not ready. The API is... I don't even know exactly what state the API is at. Daniel is your best person to talk with, probably, in terms of who you're connected with, because he's in touch. He's preparing the SafeX protocol, and he can talk the language of these guys, of the core team. And
that was kind of his problem.
Well, no, it was. And just to finish that story, I remember, boy, I was there to hear Daniel, and I know you had talked with him before, and he finished talking, and I looked up, saw you walking out down the aisle, shaking your head, going, oh my goodness, what was he talking about?
Well, and I had talked to him for like an hour before that.
Oh, you had a good idea. No, I understand.
And I grilled the snot out of him. I'm going, God, you're making this hard. Are you kidding me? I mean, and by the end of the con, I go, why don't you just say this, this, and this? Just say it! I mean, so when he gave his presentation, I was hoping it would kind of improve it, and it was just so...
Well, he didn't know. Actually, it was also a mixed audience, and there was just many, many problems there. And so, I don't know if you saw. I sent you another email with a link to the podcast that I did interviewing him.
Yeah,
and I really acknowledged that you really did. I really appreciated you. Go, boy, he needs some help, and you really did help. And I said, that's a niche I think I can fill.
Yeah,
because I actually probably spent 4 or 5 hours talking with him on the phone before the interview, to where I was able to lay out what the importance was and how to communicate it and what questions to ask. And I was really proud. It came off very well.
Very good.
There's so many different people. This network has the potentiality of impacting everybody on the planet, whether they ever connect to it or not. And that's very important. And so I want to make that as accessible as possible to as many kinds of people as are ready and willing and interested to be.
See, I went through this before with, one, the internet, Two, right. You know, when broadband started hitting. Three, creating my own website. Four, doing the MP3. What's that? You know, everything right, I've ever said on radio has been internet. And then with Bitcoin. And all of these had the same thing in common. It kept in expanding the power and capacity of the individual to communicate whatever with anybody else. And, oh, my goodness, they started including value. And the man just does not like it. Not one little itty-bitty teeny-weeny bit. And those that want to rule us, they'll do whatever they can to maintain this control. And when they start to lose it, then it's just bread and circuses, distraction to mushroom cloud kind of crap. And I'm just going, there is something. We have to be able to bypass this. With this generation next, they are not susceptible to this group think kind of stuff as much as they were. Even when I was in high school, everybody in the entire high school was watching Roots or some other miniseries or, you know, whatever. Right. On network television at the time of the, you know, three networks and PBS or something. And I'm going, when this, it's gotten to the point now that, you know, the cable, I was at Sam's Club, you know, getting some stuff or whatever, and they had the guy there, what's your television? Buy my dish, DirecTV, whatever the heck it was. And I'm going, standing there at the table, and he started chatting up the guy I was with, and we're just sitting there yakking with him, and I'm going, tell me. You know, I mean, how many people are just shifting over to Roku? How many people are just doing internet television, smart TVs? And I mean, and he goes, yeah, it's a big thing, man. They're just all shifting over. There's really nothing we got to offer. And I'm going, yeah, but when I look at my cable or I'm looking at my Roku, they have much greater, more information on me than they ever did and any of the other. They know what I watch. They know how long I watch it. They know, you know, my search terms, who's in front of the TV, which users. I'm going, oh my goodness. I need this kind of information that's available to me without them snooping on everything. So Safe Network's going to have its own Roku. It's going to have its own television. It's going to have its own, I get whatever and anything I want. It's going to have its own format. I mean, I can see this coming, but what it does is extract our mind from the collective evaluation mind of the king. For the first time in human history, in the mid-90s, I remember, you know, I was burned and I'm laying there recovering for a while. I'm going, oh, I get it. This is carnivore echelon thing was going on. And I go, for the first time in human history, the king has got into the peasants' heads. He knows what he's thinking about. They know what the mood is. They can gauge it. They can turn the dial. And then you find out that Google and Facebook are doing all negative postings and so on and see how it changed your mood, and then positive, and how many kittens can they put up, and I'm going, wow, we're just freaking lab rats. So when they take all that away in the Safe Network, it's more than just how much access to stuff you got, you know, that's bad for you or whatever. It's they don't have access to our brains, and they will freak. They will, I don't know what they'll do, but they're not going to go quietly. So we need to be in anticipation of this. And that's why early on I want to get certain things up and it's always available. It can never go away. And I'm going to see, and they're going to have to try and take it away again. And then they will, and we'll come back with something else. And, you know, whatever.
I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how that all is going to play out.
I don't either.
Well, but, you know, it's definitely going to be interesting.
Yeah.
And I think that this technology is a real field changer. It's going to change the playing field. I think it's in ways that have been hinted at, but not arrived at yet. And I think the time for this technology is here. It's going to there. I tell you, there have been things in science fiction that have predicted this, that, and it's starting to come forward.
Well, in the forums, are they concerned? Is there some effort to, you know, you get the Men in Black knocking on Nervine's door or anything?
No, it's like, yeah, whatever. You know, we're just carrying forward. You know, there's not a lot of distraction in those directions. Every now and then somebody will say, oh, well, you know, it's all hopeless. And people say, well, I understand, but, and lay out the case. And those that want to persist with hopelessness, kind of wander off, go someplace else, or they're changed, one or the other.
No, this is going to happen. It's just whether this, you know, I'm shocked Bitcoin has worked as well as it did for as long as it has. You know,
sure.
I'm like, wow, if that isn't a sign of, you know, what could happen. So,
well, you know, Bitcoin, I don't, I the future is uncertain about Bitcoin. I think it has a lot of staying power, and I think even the technology that the SAFE network brings will bring a change to the efficiency and economy of Bitcoin. And so, and which is fine with me, because I'm really happy to have a proved out interface between fiat currencies and digital, because there's a tremendous amount of value flowing into Bitcoin. When SafeCoin is available and SafeX is available, then transferring that value into a completely liquid digital asset will be wide open. And that's going to change a lot.
I've been keeping track of Voorhees' new project for exchange.
Oh, Shapeshift is great. Shapeshift is great.
Yeah, Shapeshift. I was trying to think of what it was. You know, Shapeshift, I'm going, I looked right at him and I go, money launder. I mean, you know, that's what they're going to claim, you know, because you're bringing in stuff, tumbling around, goes to this one, that one, went to this coin, that coin, came back, and then it's squeaky clean. And it's squeaky. And I go, okay. Not that I have a problem with that. I don't give a crap, you know, but it's that's Cheers. What they're going to say.
Well, that's fine. They can say it. It's not going to stop it being done. In Shapeshift is, you know, I mean, it's a good example. I don't think. I mean, who knows? Who knows what bullies will do? You know, bullies will be bullies. And we just have to, you know, that's a fact, a historical fact we have to deal with. And like I say, we work to make them irrelevant. The less relevant bullies are, the better off we are.
All right. Well, stay in touch with us. Let us know where, you know, we're going on this. You know my spiel. I'm in.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I listen to you all the time, Ernie.
I'm in. You know, I'm in. But to think it's just going to go smooth sailing from the beginning on, I'm like, nah, they're not going to let you get a free pass, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, we can... We can also, you know, beef up a shadow sometimes too. And I'm not saying discount at all, but I'm saying, hey, don't we don't have to flesh it out with our own blood, you know. We can just deal with them as they come up and not try to fight them when they're not interfacing us. That's not saying not to be cautious, but you know, just keep working on what's important. And the thing is they're not really important if we can make them irrelevant.
I'm getting my ghost gunners.
I'm going to have to come see that. I may be in the area in the next week or two.
Yeah, so. Come by. We'll maybe even have made one by then. I've got everybody's all jumping up and down wanting to make it. I go, yeah, you can get me a, you know, a blank and we'll get right on it. And there's some, they're like $89. I'm going, are you kidding me? Hell, I can buy a new one all done for $104. So, you know, I just, you know, whatever. But they want the go, whatever. So
yeah,
then.
I understand. But it's just. Hey, and then economies of scale. He's not going to be the only one offering such things before long.
Yeah, no, I don't know, man. For the price and the quality of this thing, I mean, it is high quality.
No, I remember you were talking about that.
He did not chintz around. And when there was something of subpar, I went to the production facility and looked, and what was holding up production was this one coupling. You had to have a kind of a flexible coupling between the motor and, you know, where it went in and out with a screw drive kind of thing. And it has this one coupling that would just come delaminate, come apart. It was some piece of crap, something. And he had on all his bench test stuff just keep him running for weeks. And it was just one coupling that would go. So he had to hold production and everything. That's when he had all, finally got this new, call it a spider coupling, whatever it is. But once he got that one, and it's a much higher quality, going to last forever, boom, then he started shipping. And I looked at every single component, every machine piece, every spindle, every motor, everything. You looked at all those different ones that he had ordered and different companies that had and the high quality, whatever. And you look at what he had available and what he did and custom made his own, that I'm going, wow, this is way better, you know, and that's why he did it. So I'm really impressed with this machine. I'm looking forward to it. I got a bunch of guys sitting there playing Snoopy the Vulture on the doghouse wanting to jump on it, you know. But we got to be careful because they just changed the law. You know, if you do what he's talking about and you have, like, friends come over and use it, or you make a few and you give them the, you know, you're going to the hoosegow on that one. So we got to be careful.
You got to keep an eye on what the bullies are up to.
Well, I'd sell it to here. I made my whatever. I sell it to you, and you can sell it to this guy, and leave what we'll come up
exactly.
with whatever. But
yeah.
You know, just want to be legal as long as I'm out openly talking about it. But you know, whatever. Hey, thanks for spending the extra time with me.
It's a pleasure.
It's still time for me to talk to Nick. Just sent an email to Don. I just read this morning saying that they wanted to wait a little longer. They're near launch, and they want to wait.
That's my thing. I want to talk to Nick and David and whoever else. There's a lot of the core team I'd like to poke around and talk to, but their heads down and, you know, elbows up, and they're just working like crazy because it really is close. I don't know exactly what that means in terms of time, but when you talk about a project of this magnitude, when you're getting into the real test net rolling right into the launch, it's of a network of this intricacy and magnitude, and it's just, you know, we'll take it when we get it.
Well,
but in the meantime, that gives us plenty of time to get a lot of people on board, because the more people, the merrier when it's ready to go, because it will be a more resilient network with lots of nodes running.
Well, hopefully. I mean, that's what I was hoping. I told him, I said, look, let me know. I got, a dozen computers within 10 feet of me, you know.
Sure.
I was loaded up, man. Let's rock and roll. When Infinity came up with the idea of we got to plug and play, I go, fine, amen, let's do that. Now, if I got, you know, and then I got, you know, a Vista over there, a 7 over there, a 8 whatever over here, a 10's coming in there, I got, you know, Windows different and whatever, I got a couple of Linux machines, I'm going, well, what do I load up? How do I do that? Well, working
on... believe me, that's... they are working to get all that very, very easily done for all major operating systems and Linux systems. And there's a lot of work. That's part of what takes time, is sniggling out those details and getting it where it's an easy experience. Because that is one thing I can tell you, is that this isn't just all about making a high-tech network that only geeks can get. They're working like really hard on the front end, the user interface, and the simplicity.
Grandma just buttons.
Where it's just dead easy and easy to understand and well explained, and stuff where you don't even have to have it explained because you just do it. And that's the ideal. These guys really understand the details of that, and the whole team is focused not only on the intricacies of the underlying technology, but the simplicity of use and interface. And that's what's going to make it really go. Because however cool it is in terms of privacy, security, and freedom, if it's not easy to use, people will go, oh, well, I'll just keep doing Facebook.
Yeah, grandma just button.
Yeah, absolutely. That's you sing that song about the just button, and I totally agree.
Well, you know who really takes that to heart? Paul Pway over at Airbits, man.
Airbits is great. I met Paul and I talked with him at.
He did.
And it's a great wallet.
Yeah, because it's freaking easy. You know, that's the first one that I loaded on Donna's smartphone. We had Tragedy and Hope here. Richard Grove and Lisa Arbuchowski were here this week. And they did, a year ago, they did I said, just do this thing, you know, so you can understand Bitcoin. Because he's real anti-Bitcoin. So they're going to just do what they're doing. And I go, but I need you to understand it. I want you to put your mind on this thing. So Will Pangman did like 5 hours with him, and it edited down to like an hour and a half on how to do two-part authentication. And so when they went through all that, Paul Pway watched this over and over. He went through and he goes, wow, that is so freaking complicated and such a pain. We can default that and program everything that they're talking about. We can use that template, you know, of them walking Grove through this, and he used that as part of the default two-part authentication on Airbits.
No, I attest that the Airbits wallet is really so much easier to use than anything I've run into, and it's less confusing. Yeah, I mean, it's easy to get confused with the different numbers and, oh my goodness, and wallets and what. And that, I mean, ugh. And I'm, you know, I'm not a slouch, but I, you freeze up, you go, should I push this button? What's going to happen if I push this button? Right. Is it all going to go away? Ah, will I be able to get it back? You know, so yeah, Airbits makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, that's blockchain. You know, I had a lot of bad luck with blockchain.info, man. And in the customer service, they just, I think they're kind of giving up on, you know, being a wallet. It seems to me like they're more worried working on APIs or something.
Well, yeah, I don't know. They're, any of them have not been wonderful. And then you've got the Coinbase, which is basically a little bit more trustworthy Mt. Gox. A lot more trustworthy, probably. But still, it's not really the Bitcoin blockchain. Anyway, blockchain technologies have their place. And people are so excited about what blockchain tech represents that they're going to be really surprised what other solutions come to the table. And
what do you know about Patrick Byrne's stock market offering?
Well, actually, just what I've heard on Let's Talk Bitcoin and your show and so forth. He's got a really good team of counterparty people, and I imagine they'll be interfacing with Factum, and that's my guess. I haven't got the current details on it, but they're smart guys, and they're going to put together something that's useful, that actually, when you have a stock, it's yours. That's pretty cool. It keeps all the
naked short selling crap, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to move it into a new realm. And I don't know whether it was on one of the LTB shows or yours where Patrick was saying that, Wall Street sees this coming. They see it coming, and they're going, you know, they're starting to ask him questions and go, what should I be prepared for? Because they know that that what they're doing can't last.
He's due to come on to talk about his lawsuit. I mean, you know, there was some revelations that he couldn't tell me before. And a lot of times he says the attorneys won't tell me anything because they know I can't shut up, you know.
And it's kind of like you, huh?
Right. You know, I've been interviewing him since, God, probably 10, on Naked Short Selling thing. And as time has gone on, I mean, it got pretty clear that you could see that he was, you know, freedom-oriented, leave-me-alone-ist guy, and with $1 billion done hurt. So I'm the future looks, I'm doing okay as far as optimism long-term for my grandkids, probably. But my children that are in their 20s, I'm just like, man, it's going to get rough here pretty soon. And those aren't going to go quietly into the night. And all this debt that they have, how is that going to be impacted? The value of their homes. My wife's a real estate agent. I mean, I look at this stuff and go, man, this is just, it's not sustainable. That which can't continue doesn't. I mean, it's just going to go in what direction? I don't know. Then we got Charles Goyette doing the Empire of Lies documentary of Ron Paul's life going up against the man. You know, that's going to be of interest. That'll come out right in beginning of 16. We have the election cycle that nobody's going to care about. At Porkfest, they're running a big campaign. It's a nobody primary. You know, vote for nobody. And you have all these different candidates. Well, like Davi's favorite is Cthulhu, which is this, you know, he's standing there with a Better Call Saul pose in his pinstripe suit, and he's got like an octopus face. He's some alien. And I go, what's Cthulhu? Oh, it's the most evil thing in the war, in the universe. And the slogan is, why settle for the lesser of evils? I mean, come on, you know? So I'm just going, okay, we got that going for us. So it's just, we'll have fun with this, but it's still going to be, as much as we doomsay all the time, the people just wind up coming up with another way of doing it. It's just the man tries to, what cut can they get out of it? What's their revenue stream? We even have with the legalization of marijuana initiatives and so on going here, I'm interviewing the people doing it, and they're so-and-so from MPP or so-and-so from Normal or so-and-so from whatever. And their whole thing is that the law enforcement, their big concern is like, hey, we make a shitload of money off of the drug war. In your initiative, you legalize it. It doesn't have anywhere a replacement revenue stream for us. Where's our revenue stream?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's built in. It's just really, really perverse incentives all around. But those things, you know, those things will wash out. And, you know, the way I keep my head up, Ernie, honestly, is I realize that life is all entertainment, and we go to see all kind of different shows for entertainment, suspense, tragedy, comedy, blood and guts, horror films. You know, they're all entertaining. If you keep life entertaining on that, you know, and you go, well, as long as it's entertaining and I can be engaged, then all's okay. So I don't worry too much about exactly how the future is going to turn out, because I can't determine it, but I can sure keep entertained.
Yeah, no, I'm entertained. The other thing we got to do is monetizing, and, you know, the freedom oriented. There's no money really in it unless you're, well, you know,
that's part of the beauty. That's part of the beauty of SafeCoin. It's like it's built in, and it's going to be global. It's going to be, this is something that you know, you'll be able to do a little bit on your smartphone even. This is coming forward where anybody who runs the network for any period of time is going to be able to get sprinkled with a little bit of goodness, at least enough to cover your usage. And if you really, you know, so these things are going to, this is a value that's going to turn up in the hands of billions of people all over the planet. And they're going, well, what can I do with this? And there's not a huge concentrations like the Bitcoin billionaires that we've got, who had mined millions of Bitcoin before it got popular. This is, you know, we've got some crowd sale people that have considerable amount, but the bulk of SafeCoin is going to be sprinkled everywhere, and people are going to go, okay, well, I can do this or that with it, or Joe down the block wants some, so he'll pay me some hard cash. It's going to be a completely different thing than any cryptographic currency we've seen before, or actually any means of exchange of value that we've seen before. And the Safe Network enables all of that.
There'll be an exchange. There's going to be some exchange somewhere. It'll eventually
SafeX is going to be a decentralized, first decentralized peer-to-peer exchange. And the first thing that, I don't know if Daniel, I don't remember in your show if Daniel talked about it, but you should listen to the interview. It's really cool. But the first, one of the first things that's going to be available on the SafeX is SafeCoin to Bitcoin exchange, peer to peer, completely decentralized, no central point. That's going to open up some real remarkable possibilities, and a lot of value is going to flow into SafeCoin.
Yay! I get to be rich finally.
Well, hey, what the heck? I've never been in it about being rich. I got a little bit whatever I could afford of SafeCoin, and we'll just see. If I had more money, I'd be buying the MadeSafe token. And I know, you know, quite a few people who have, and there's every likelihood that it's going to be the bomb, but. It's not what it's about, really. It's the SafeCoin is really, really cool because it serves the ideals of the whole network, which is privacy, security, and freedom, and secure access for everybody. And let's be able to talk and communicate amongst ourselves in whatever ways we want to voluntarily ourselves. And yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm just looking for where the weak links are, and it's going to be
You're not alone. We're always that's one thing on the forum. You can go search and find out what people are looking at. There's a lot of promoters, but everybody's willing to go, well, there's something to this scenario. And as things have come up, attack vectors have been fleshed out. Changes have been made, maybe because they were necessary, but maybe just to go, you know, we can shore that up and make it even more impossible, and for that to be a vector. And the team has, you know, responded in terms of the.
Well, what's the team? The core development, is it all coming out of Troon, or they got guys?
Well, it's all focused out of the company MadeSafe in Troon. Of course, they have remote people that work for them all over the world, and there are. A couple of pods. The idea is to foster development pods all over that are developing applications for the network, and also people that are working on core development.
Well, how many applications? I mean, are they far enough along that people are doing the actual applications?
Well, SafeX is one. There's yes, I'm sure there are others, and there's quite a. I think there's a pretty good stable of applications that have been being worked on for a long time. I think Life Stuff is the what the MadeSafe people have called the kind of the application suite that they're developing in. And I actually didn't understand what Life Stuff was, but I got an idea. There's also a space called Work Stuff, and anyway, there'll be a pretty good array of applications to start with, but that'll just start the game. Anybody will have access to the API, the programming interface, and can develop stuff and put it out there. And if it gets used, they'll get paid. Pretty cool.
Yeah, no, cool. I'm on it. You keep me informed on what I got to do to turn on all my computers.
I will keep trying to be informed myself. I'm not at the core. I'm not employed. I'm just a passionate follower who can talk a little bit of geek, enough to get confused, but I have enough communication skills to kind of get through it and hopefully share some understandings with
others.
Well,
if you got some guys you think we should talk to and put on the show, let me know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm happy to.
Hey, thanks for spending the extra time with me, John. I appreciate
it. It's a pleasure. Now, I guess Don will send me a link to access the file.
As soon as I get off with you, I'm going to start editing, and it'll be within an hour. We'll have it up.
Faster than I need it.
Okay.
All right, Ernie. Thanks a bunch. It's really a pleasure. And like I say, I'll very likely be in your vicinity in the next couple of weeks, so I'll let you know.
That'd be awesome. Thanks, John. Right. Bye.